Hey, what's going on, everybody? In deep voice, sound tough. What's up, everybody? What's going on, players? It's the Jeff Gerstmann Show. Live from the top of, I don't know. I don't have any cool rap like that about, like, the talent on loan. None of that out here. We're just doing this show and making it happen. And I hope that everybody's having a awesome Tuesday. It's Sonic Tuesday, everyone. That's very exciting for some folks here. Sonic Tuesday is back, and the release of Sonic Frontiers is upon us. It is either a harbinger of, it's fitting that Sonic Frontiers is releasing the same day as Election Day here in the United States, because it gives you a nice treat. Get out there and vote, and then when you're done, Sonic Frontiers will be waiting for you. Did they choose Wednesday for God of War specifically to not release a game on Election Day, do you think? Do you think that was a factor there? Because it's one of those things where it's like out in New Zealand right now, and then it rolls out across time zones, I think, right? So it's technically out tonight. A lot of people mailing in their votes. I normally mail in votes and mail in my ballot and all that sort of stuff. Actually, what I've been doing is I get my ballot in the mail and then I take it to a drop-off box. So I don't even necessarily put it in the mail per se. It's more of a, all right, I can put this in this box where ostensibly the votes are counted and everything's on the up and up, but hey, what are you gonna do? That's obviously a big topic around these parts, and by these parts I mean this nation. If you're outside this nation, maybe you care about it, maybe you don't. I don't know. It seems like there's oftentimes a lot of stuff that gets voted on in the U.S. ends up impacting the rest of the world in ways that they're not cool with. But there you go. So anyway, that's my long-winded way of saying you should go vote. I think voting is good. I think voting is cool. I think, not to make a bold claim here, I think they should make voting as easy as possible for as many people as possible. That's where I stand on it. They should make it so that people can vote. So that all people can vote. Do I think that Sonic would vote? Comes out of the chat. No, I don't think Sonic would vote. I think Sonic would be like, no, I don't, it's all the same, man. They're all slow pokes to me. Who's the pro chili dog candidate? Or whatever. Or he would just, like, get completely high and go in the booth and vote for Dr. Robotnik. He would just write in Dr. Robotnik. Not even Eggman. He's just like, Robotnik. Yeah, fuck yeah, man. That's probably what. That's probably how Sonic would. That's probably how it would go down, and then Sonic would somehow get arrested at a polling place for some inadvertent sort of, like, he wouldn't be actively trying to cause trouble. It would just sort of happen. You know how that happens. People are always screwing up and getting arrested. Get your ballot in if you haven't already. Head on down to your polling place, do your thing. These midterm elections, it's easy to just go like, whatever, man. But, like, you know, that's the stuff that is sometimes going to impact your local area a little bit more. There's a lot of sketchy people on the ballot in a lot of different places in this country. A 10 years ago, even if not a generation ago, you would have looked at and be like, well, there's no way that this fucking weird crank is going to win office. Like, oh, they've got the backing of one of the two major political parties, huh? Well, shit, I guess it's all bad. Anyway, get out there and vote, because there's a lot of friggin' lunatics out there. And yeah, yes, as Reverend 408 says, there's weed is on the ballot in Arkansas. So, you know, a lot of different local statutes, a lot of different regulations, all that other stuff on your local ballot that you may, yeah, Maryland as well. So, you know, legalize it for Sonic. But the deviant art Sonic that is green instead of blue. You know what I mean? I got a beverage here that this is, I don't know that they even make these anymore. I don't know where this came from. I don't know where, how long we've had it, but it is Monster Energy Ultra Rosa. And I found this in a cabinet. I think my wife purchased it, and I imagine it's some kind of rosé, or I don't know what this is supposed to be. But I don't think I have ever seen this in stores. I don't know where she would have found it, and I don't know if they still make it. But I'm running low on drinks, so it was in there, and I was like, well, let's get this one cold. So, let's crack this open and see what's up. We'll add it to the list later. We won't bog down the top of the show with the list just yet, but smells kind of like grapefruit. Smells kind of like grapefruit. Mm. It kind of tastes like nothing. Weird. It doesn't taste like grapefruit, but it also just tastes like a kind of whatever generic fruity. This is weird. I don't know. Generic fruit. But a definite grapefruit kind of smell, which is really strange. Have I tried the Amazon branded energy drink yet? That's a great question. I have not. I have not tried it because you have to buy it by the case. And so I have not checked it out just yet. But you know, what are you going to do? It snowed, today it's supposed to rain. It is incredibly sunny out there. But over the weekend, in a nearby community, there was a snow festival at a park. And my daughter being a big fan of Frozen and having never seen snow, and I don't know when we're going to be able to get away to, you know, whether like a Lake Tahoe situation or, you know, wherever we end up to finally see some snow. We decided to go out to the snow festival, not really knowing what to expect other than, you know, the ads for it were like Winter Wonderland. Come see the frickin' snow. Get out here, check out this snow. Check out all this snow. And I'm like, well, all right. That's, you know, you don't really get to see a lot of snow in Southern California. At least not. Well, anyway, so we went out there, and parking was a nightmare. And we got finally situated, got out of the car, walked all the way over there, walked into this park. They were not charging entrance fees, which was appropriate, I guess. Well, whatever, you know, I'm not shitting on this thing. This actually ended up being fun, but not for the snow part. We pull up. As we get closer, you see that people have taken like slush, like the type of, you know, like the shit that looks like it came out of the bottom of your freezer. It looks like they somehow got a mountain of that and poured it onto the grass in this park. And, you know, they had fashioned it into some slides, basically. So they were, you know, had people sitting on the saucers, the little sled discs, and they had little kids sliding down, those things, which were just, you know, every kid that slid down it packed it all in even tighter until it was just a solid block of ice. And these kids were fucking hauling ass down this thing. It's like, oh man, like even the littlest one that for the littlest kids was like, these kids were barreling down this thing at like a kind of an unsafe rate of speed. And they had three that were larger for larger kids. We went to the littlest one. My daughter waited in line, got up there, got on top of the hay bales at the front of it, and then looked at it and went like, maybe later. And then, so she bailed out, which was, you know, kind of to be expected. Next to that, they just had a pile of this stuff sitting there. And there were kids and parents dressed up. We did not dress up our kids in like snow pants and all this other stuff. But like there were kids there that were like super dressed up in like their warm weather, their cold weather clothes, you know, like layers and hats and all this sort of stuff. And they're just standing in this big pile of slush, just stomping on it. And it's just this dirty, this filthy pile of sludge that kids are just stomping on, and some of them are picking it up and throwing it at each other, like trying to make snowballs out of it. And it was just crazy just watching this scene unfold of just like the, and it's like not a big pile of snow. It was like six, maybe let's call it generously like a 10 foot diameter circle of very, you know, packed down and filthy, dirty, snowy sludge. And it was just hilarious to see it. It was just like looking at it and going like, yeah, no, this is pretty much what I expected this to be. Like in your head, you're like, oh, well, wouldn't it be cool if they like made, if they somehow generated enough snow to fill this entire park? But like, no, realistically. And it was, you know, it was not, it's been cooler around here lately. So it was not, you know, it wasn't like it was 90 degrees or something. It was like in the 60s or something like that. So stuff was like sticking around for a little while. It wasn't like it was just immediately melting. I did not see them replenish the supply, I guess is the way to describe it. You know, they put out the stuff and there were some kids and volunteers and stuff, you know, around. But I did not see them going like, oh, well, all this stuff just melted, so we need to go get more. It was sticking around well enough. But there were kids running over to the luge, the slide area, and pulling pieces of ice off of that and then flinging it at each other and stuff like that. And I was just like, okay. And then as we get there, you know, it's like two things happen, you know, over the loudspeaker at the main stage. You've got a guy reading off license plate numbers because the parking situation was so bad that everyone just parked illegally. So they're just like, if you're in the white Odyssey license plate 8FTZ804, you gotta move it. And no one moved their cars because they were reading those same car descriptions out over and over again. And then after that, I was like, okay, now that business is out of the way, we got a karate demonstration coming to the stage. And I guess like the art teacher at the local high school is also a black belt karate man, and teaches karate at a local karate place. And so there were like, you know, so we got to watch a little karate demonstration of kids and adults doing, you know, the basic, hi, like real, just, you know, they were all doing it at the same time. And then there was, you know, river dance style, what, Irish dancing? What do they even call that? River dance. We just call it river. I just call it river dance. There was some kids doing that stuff and, you know, doing dances with hula hoops and stuff like that. So it was just like this cavalcade of like the perfect, like local event of just, the kids from the school are coming down here. They're going to put on a show for you. They're doing a river dance and they're going to get up on the stage and do it. And you look at it and, you know, they're like nine and, you know, one of them falls over and is mortified about it. And it's like, it's fine. You're doing great. Like you're doing awesome. You're nine. This is awesome that you're able to do this at all. But, you know, not how they wanted it to go. At one point, I think the iPhone they were using to play the music either died or overheated or something, you know, whatever happened. Because like mid-song, like mid-routine, these girls are doing their routine and then just the music just fucking stops. And the guy's like, oh, well, the iPhone stopped. Hang on a sec here. We're going to get it back up and going. And they had to start the routine over. It was like, oh, boy. So, yeah, like I said, the perfect local event. There were teenagers dressed up as Disney princesses and you could get your photos taken with them. So we did that. And my daughter had a meltdown when we had to leave because she wanted to hang out with the princesses. And there were, you know, people doing face painting and food trucks and the stuff you would expect to see at a local event. So it was a good time. It was just real silly seeing their attempt at snow, their snow goals. That was maybe the worst or the least interesting part about it. It was whatever. It was fine. Fall is here. And then so we did that. I don't know. And then in other news, I've been looking to dump some cartridges. I've got I don't have any of them handy here, but I have been sitting on a bunch of Neo Geo Pocket Color cartridges for a good long time. And a lot of those games have been dumped and released onto the internet and all that sort of stuff. I have a few that are unreleased betas. And they're not that interesting. It's like, here's a beta version of Puyo Pop. And when you launch it, it doesn't seem any different at all from the released version, but who the hell knows? So whatever, I'm going to dump all that stuff and get it all done. Thanks to Steve for hooking me up with this is the Sani cart reader. It's the open source, cartridge reader. This is, I think, a V3 device. And this is a specifically the part that is hard to get that Steve was very generous to provide this whole rig here. This goes into the SNES port on this, and then it is a Neo Geo Pocket Color controller adapter here. And so I started dumping a few of those, only to discover, and I knew this, but I like inherently I knew this, but like I didn't know that it would necessarily impact the pro. Oh, jeez. Banging microphones, making a mess. Save data on Neo Geo Pocket carts are stored like right on the cartridge alongside the game data. Like they just get flashed to the cartridge by the device itself, by the handheld. It's not like a Pokemon cartridge with a battery in it or something like that. It is made of sterner stuff. However, that means if you have put that cartridge in and played it and saved data ever, the dump of it is going to change. So now there's like, okay, the only right answer here is to get pristine dumps of cartridges that have never been used. And so I went on and looked around, and I found someone who over the last couple of years has been actually redumping all of these Neo Geo Pocket Color games and searching for these pristine versions of these cartridges, whether they're unopened or whatever. He's just buying loose cartridges and hoping for the best. And so I'm going to go through and look at what that person has dumped and look at what I have. Cause I have like 9 or 10 sealed Neo Geo Pocket Color games down here. So I've got these pristine dumps, y'all, in addition to a couple of these beta cartridges. So that's been a bit of a nighttime project for me here and there. I need to go out in the garage because I know I have more cartridges than this. I just don't know where they are, but I found the bulk of them. So I need to figure that out and go. I'd probably reach out to that person and be like, hey, I see you have dumped this stuff. I am in possession of this stuff. What are you specifically looking for? And what's the best way for me to handle these betas and all this other stuff? So, you know, it's just something I've been sitting on for, well, I don't know, whenever the Neo Geo Pocket Color came out, before it came out is when I got all these cartridges from SNK. And so, I've been sitting on that stuff for a long time. Figure I should preserve it before the cartridges catch on fire or explode or, you know, whatever the heck happens. But that Puyo Pop beta does have save data on it. So it is used, but also it's probably the best available. I doubt anyone out there has this specific version of this game in a totally unused format, right? Like it's highly unlikely. I've been doing that and also redumping a lot of I have the fabled box of Super Famicom cartridges over here that is like the first thing on my list that I'm just like, I gotta get rid of this stuff. I just don't need it. And what were the first two games out of the box? It's a Sailor Moon game and a Ranma. Ranma. These anime peoples. So these games are already widely available online. None of this is like mysterious or anything like that. But a lot of this stuff, you know, part of the process that they're going through, a lot of these people that are trying to preserve dumps of these cartridges and dumps of CD-based games and all this other stuff is like they want multiple versions dumped. They want to verify that, like, yes, this is real. Because a lot of this stuff, you know, dumping hardware has progressed. Like, this is a standalone device, this SANI cart reader, where it just has an SD card in it. You plug in USB power, and then there are two buttons on the front of it, and it just dumps games to the SD card. It's super convenient to just bring out into the field and you know, whatever you're doing. And this stuff has come so far since the old days. The Neo Geo Pocket stuff, I want to say, who remembers Bung? That's a great question. Anyone out there remember Bung? Bung was the company, the Hong Kong-based company, I believe, that made a lot of copier devices for consoles. Like, Lick Sang is another. Yes, yeah. And so they made, what is it, the Flash Linker, I think, was the Neo Geo Pocket version of it. They also made a Game Boy cart dumper. And all that stuff hooked up to the parallel port on a computer. Parallel ports are where you used to plug in printers back before printers were wireless. And most computers, I can't remember the last time I saw a computer that actually had a full-on parallel port on it. So the idea of, like, and I have some of that hardware. I have the Neo Geo Flash Linker somewhere out there. But, like, super unreliable, like, nothing that was verifying. Like, the software was just like, yeah, here's your dump. Is it good? Fucking, I don't know. Like, now all this stuff is doing checksumming and all this, like, crazy stuff. Like, the if you were dumping carts back in the days, you are blown away by how far this stuff has come. Seriously, it is crazy how much better all this technology has gotten. Even from the, like, the Retrode, which was is a popular cart dumper that is not, I don't know that anyone's selling the Retrode anymore. And Analog's devices, the super, what is it, the Super ST, no, what the hell, Super NT, that's what they call that thing, right? Their SNES, their FPGA SNES, like that thing, if you've got custom firmware on it, you can use that to dump SNES carts, which is nice. But yeah, it's just crazy how far this stuff has come, this little tiny standalone device. So I've been messing around with that, and it's so easy that, like, originally I was like, well, I want to dump these Neo Geo Pocket carts and all this stuff. And now suddenly I'm like, actually, I should probably just take a look at the people that are out there cataloging this stuff and see, like, if there are games that have only been dumped once and I happen to have them, just be like, hey, here's a verified, like, hey, I dumped it too. It's this, you're right. You were right. This dump matches that dump. I don't think I have anything, at least retail, that is going to be like something that these people have not found over the years of them dumping, like, obsessively dumping cartridges or anything like that. But maybe I can back up a few and be like, yep, I dumped it too. It's the same. We're part of the dump crew. Like, dump Matsumoto out here, strictly dumping. But then I do have, like, you know, those beta carts, and I have a few prototype, you know, pre-release versions of SNES games and stuff like that. Nothing exciting. It's like Super Hunt for Red October, you know, or Bubsy 2 for the Genesis, you know, like nothing anyone would actually ever want. Anyway, so I'm gonna try and get that stuff done, and I don't, you know, maybe get that stuff out there. I don't, you know, like, I don't really, I'm not, I have no I'm not out here going like, well, I've got to hoard the data so that these cartridges, these prototype cartridges, are worth maximum amounts of money. Like, nah, whatever. It's fucking Super Tom and Jerry for the SNES. Like, it doesn't matter. Dump it, get it out there, and whatever. You know what I mean? That's my philosophy. That's my dump philosophy. Is just whatever, put it out there. That there's that Sega erotic thriller, you know, or whatever, the Sega Soft game that was, I think it was originally known as Amazonian. I'm looking here to get the name of it. Sacred Pools. A copy, multiple copies of Sacred Pools were released over the last week, and this was a game that Sega Soft, so in like kind of a division of American Sega off to the side, like it was this interactive movie that they were going to make. It seemed like it was in the vein of a lot of the Sega CD games, and they were really trying to get behind it as like, this is adult stuff. This is not for kids. That, not that it's like porno, but you know, it's meant to be like a little racier or something along those lines. And I vaguely remember Sega or Sega Soft or some kind of like the E3 that this game would have been at, that they had some kind of like Egyptian, Amazonian, whatever, because the game was really known as Amazonian, so not necessarily Egyptian, but like they had some kind of like the booth was designed to look like this game that then got killed and never came out and totally forgotten about and all this other stuff. And so that game surfaced, which is really crazy. And I have not tried that out yet. Maybe we'll stream some of that once I do verify that there is in fact no nudity in it, I guess. But whatever. Why don't we take a break? And we'll come back and we'll talk about some video games. It's Sonic Tuesday, everybody. We'll be right back after this. You know what they say. Easy back it up. Easy back it up. Easy back it up. Once again, come rewind. I think that's what they say. But we're talking about backing up them files. And there's Backblaze. Backblaze makes backing up and accessing your data astonishingly easy. What's the deal with Backblaze? Backblaze is some software you install and it just handles it for you. It backs up your data off-site to their servers, encrypted if you so choose, for just $7 a month. This is unlimited computer backup for Mac and PC. So you give them $7 a month, and I don't care how many hard drives you got in this Mac or this PC, they will back that data up. And you can access it from anywhere in the world. You log into their website, and you can look at your backups all sorted by drive letter, you know, assuming you're on Windows, all that sort of stuff. You can download an iOS app and get some stuff that way. If you just happen to need a couple of quick things. But hey, let's talk about the inevitable. This has happened to me a few times since I started using Backblaze. And here is how the process works for me. A hard drive decides I'm done. Click, 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 brrr, click, 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 brrr. And that hard drive is history. One time I had smoke pour out of a hard drive. That one was on me. I plugged it in wrong. That one was on me. Either way, the data was gone. That data got smoked. And so I had to restore it. And so you go to Backblaze. You log into the website. You say, okay, there are check boxes. Like, here, I need this file. I need this file. And this file. It'll be like, okay, we're going to zip this up. And you can download it. There's a downloader you can grab for, you know, kind of easier restores and things of that nature. You get that zip file, you unzip it to the hard drive that you went and panic purchased. Backblaze also has a nice newsletter that they send out. If you want to know which drives are good and which drives are bad, Backblaze will issue like, hey, in our centers that we use to back up all this data, here are the hard drives we've been purchasing, and here's their failure rates and all this other stuff. It's actually nice. It's actually a nice little newsletter to get to be like, okay, I'm thinking about getting a 24 terabyte drive. Are they reliable at all? They'll eventually have some data on that sort of stuff, which is kind of awesome. Backblaze, kind of awesome. You just restore that data, throw it on your hard drive, and you're back in business. You know, if you lost terabytes of data and you don't want to, you know, babysit these zip files and all this other stuff, you can get them to just send it to you in the mail. They'll send you a hard drive, you know, a whole thing. You'll be like, you know, hey, here's my credit card in case I decide to take this hard drive and run off to the Cayman Islands. But they send you the hard drive, you copy the data over, and then you return it to them and you get a full refund, all that other stuff. It's nice. And hey, there's some additional file retention. It's $7 a month. If you want to throw an extra $2 a month on top of that, you can increase your retention history to 1 year. So if you've got files, you know, that you've maybe been gone for a while, you're like, oh, geez, I need to get that project back. I totally deleted it 8 months ago. It can still be there if you so choose. Backblaze is hyper convenient for just backing up your regular ass PC and Mac. You know, it's got settings in there for when it will back up. If you're like, hey, I don't want you to use my upstream bandwidth while I am trying to stream to the internet, for example, you know, you can work around that. It'll set up scheduling. It'll do all this other stuff. You can also just manually back up when you so choose. It'll warn you if files aren't backed up after a length of time, all that sort of stuff. Very convenient, very useful software. It has, as I've said, it has saved me multiple times. Multiple critical files that just went up in smoke, sometimes through my own doing, sometimes through the transitive property of hard drive failure. It comes for us all. Make sure that you're prepared with Backblaze. Go to backblaze.com/Jeff. They got a free, fully featured, no credit card required trial. So visit that URL to let them know that you heard it here. Go to backblaze.com/Jeff. They've got, again, a free, fully featured, no credit card required trial. So you can kick around with the software, see, you know, how it works for you, all of that other stuff. Did you know Backblaze has nearly 2 exabytes of data storage under management? And that's counting up. That is almost, hang on, there's a lot of zeros in this. That is almost 2 billion gigabytes. They have restored 55 plus billion files for customers. We're talking about billions and exabytes and all sorts of numbers that sound fake but are not. You can look it up. I swear. You can look it up. But you don't have to. It's kind of the awesome thing about Backblaze. You install it. You say, like, you know, hey, this directory you don't need to back up because this is all trash. Or, you know, it knows, like, hey, OS files on Windows, you probably don't need to back those up because if you lose your system drive, you're going to reinstall Windows anyway. So it knows. But if you want to, you can be like, no, back it all up. Back it all up. Or, you know, yeah, you can exclude files by file type, all this other stuff. Highly convenient software that you can just install, tinker with for, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes or something. It didn't take me long. You know, you don't have to tinker with it at all, honestly. And just let it do its thing. And then never think about it until that day comes when there's, you know, smoke pouring out of your PC. When a hard drive decides it's done. Oh. I feel like I'm due. It's been a while since I've had a hard drive just flame out. But it's I feel like it's around the corner. Anyway, backblaze.com/Jeff. Head over there, check out this, again, fully featured, no credit card required trial to kick around the software, see what you think. And, you know, use that URL to let them know that you listen to this show. The power of the program. All that stuff. That's backblaze.com/Jeff. Head over there right now, check out that software, and then rest easy, friends. All right, we're back, and it's time. I don't have the horns. I can't hit the horns. Is this the horn button? I'm gonna gargle your piss. That is not the horn button, is it?
Enjoy your game.
Nope.
Mushroom
Kingdom. Nope. All right. Well, we do not have the horn ready, but just imagine the horn is playing in your head, and Sonic Frontiers is now available. As of this morning, Sonic Frontiers is upon us, and we now live in a world where Sonic Frontiers is available for you to purchase. The question now being, should you purchase Sonic Frontiers? I have not played. I downloaded it this morning. There's something really dark about waking up early in the morning. The sun, you know, daylight savings time ended, and so you know, the it's a little bit lighter in the mornings than it was, but it's still just dim out there. It's been raining, so it's cloudy, gloomy, and you know, I've got my baby son here in his swing. He's 13 months old, and he's looking at me, and he's smiling, and he's like, "What are we gonna do today? What's going on today?" And I'm like, "Leave me alone, kid. I've got to install Sonic Frontiers." And I, so I came over here, and he watched me. He saw the opening moments of Sonic Frontiers. So Sonic Frontiers is, the game opens with what I played back in June, more or less. The game opens with one of the cyberspace levels, which again, I just love that they just said, like, we're calling it cyberspace levels. Like, didn't come up with any kind of spin on it, like Gigaspace or, you know, the Telematrix. Just, yeah, I don't know. It's like you finish the first kind of traditional behind-the-back 3D Sonic level, and Sonic pops out of it, and then a voice goes, "You made it out of cyberspace under your own power!" Whoa! And it just goes from there. And then you're kind of set off into this open world, open zone, whatever we're calling it now. And it tutorializes your way through how the combat works and how some of the additional abilities work and the skill tree. And this is all stuff that I played back in June. So I did not have early access to the game. I know they did send it out. I just, for whatever reason, in the back of my head, when I got an email from Sega talking about some of their PC stuff, and I forget that that's kind of separate departments of Sega. So when you get the like Sega of Europe going like, "We've got Two Point Hospital and all this other stuff," that the Sega ass Sega is actually different people. And so when they didn't mention this game at all, I was like, "Oh, they must not be sending it out." But they did send it out. I just didn't track down who the right people were and be like, "Send me Sonic Frontiers." So I am fresh to the game this morning. And I want to play more of it. It seems bad. If those statements make sense, you know what I mean? It's weird. It feels like that they are trying to, you know, because if you think about the way the world, this kind of open area that you are moving around, and then you're solving these dumb little puzzles, like literally, like there are three buttons on the ground. What should we do? Should we step on the buttons? Yeah. And then you do it, and then it has a little piano, like ding. Like and that was the reminder of like, oh right, this is a Sonic game that they are making post Breath of the Wild. Like, it's not to say that game is like desperately trying to be Breath of the Wild. I don't, you know, it doesn't seem like a game that has the depth. It doesn't seem like it has the you know, the ambition. Well, maybe not. You know, ambition's a weird comparison point, right? It is not that type of game. It doesn't feel like that type of open world game and all that other stuff. Yeah, you're not cooking things, or as far as I know. But they are trying to evoke some of the kind of quiet moments of that game and the kind of quiet soundtrack, the little piano bit, the little music, the little you solved a puzzle music riff, and some of those little things feel like it is very much like a something that would not have happened had it not been for the release of Breath of the Wild. Which in the context of a Sonic the Hedgehog game is really strange. One of the things I, you know, if you go back and look at some of the initial reveal trailers for the game, there are weird big enemies in this thing in a way that also kind of evokes Shadow of the Colossus just a tiny bit, right? And so it's, yeah, and I did fight a boss back in June that was this large enemy that like had rails around it and on it and stuff, so you were like sliding on the rail to get up there to get the hit and some of this other very silly shit. And it's a game where you are like solving puzzles to fill in pieces of the map on Kronos Island. And then on that map, there's a bunch of side tasks and all this other, like, get this memory, collect this, go do this. And here's where the 3D, the more traditional Sonic levels are. But you need to get gears in order to open them up. You need to deposit two gears into this obelisk before you can open it up and move forward. And those are numbered like 1-1. Like you do one of those levels at the very opening of the game, and it is listed as 1-1, and then you make your way to 1-2, and so on and so forth. And so, it's been interesting seeing people that have played more of the game talk about it a little bit in ideas like, oh, well, you know, the game seems really built around you doing what you want to do. Which makes me wonder if I can get by not playing any of those 3D levels, because I don't care about that style of Sonic game at all. Like the 3D Sonic game, the 3D behind the back Sonic game is just one of the most empty, dumb, worthless things that gaming has produced in the last couple of decades. I don't necessarily want to engage with any of that sort of stuff. And so the weird puzzle solving, and it's weird because like you've got these moments where you're like, okay, so what the first ability you get is the ability to hold down the Y button or triangle, and it will leave a trail behind you while you run. And so you run in a circle and anything inside that circle takes damage. What if you're holding down that button and you draw the circle? So that's why you'll see all the animated GIFs. I saw one, I'm sure we've got hundreds left to go, of people drawing dicks and all that other stuff. So don't worry. The fun is here. And so like aspects of it don't feel like it is built to go fast, but then there are rails and rows of coins in the air and floating platforms and all this other stuff that like you're supposed to kind of try to get there and zip around a little bit and collect some rings and come out the other end. And then you're like, okay, well, I landed over here now. And here's another little puzzle for me to do, I guess. But like, there's something about the way the jump is, the way the in-air movement works and the way the camera works, that just jumping up to a floating platform, I've missed like the dumbest, easiest jumps in the world because I'm not going far enough. And like just something about the in-air movement or trying to adjust your movement in once you've already jumped, you can, but not the way you feel like you should be able to. And that to me feels terrible. and you know, because there's just been cases where you just fall. And when you fall all the way out of the world, which takes way too long. And then it pops up a screen that says, try again. And it sits there for a little while, and then it puts you back in the game. And it's just like, man, like the punishment for falling off the world is such that I don't want to explore anything that goes off the land, you know? Because like you, any rails or whatever that are like above land, like who cares, whatever. But anything that like takes you out over the water and back in again, I'm like, nah. I feel like I'm just going to mess that up somehow or jump off the rail and not make it back on. And And I don't know. It's got really weird settings in it for that govern your movement, like bounce height, and just little weird like things that you wouldn't expect to be able to adjust. Things that when you look at them in the menu, go like, those look like debug options to me. Like, what the fuck are we doing? And you pick from like whether you want like action style or high speed style at the start of the game. And I think those are determine the defaults for some of those sliders. But you can go in and just adjust those sliders. It's not immediately clear. I mean, they say what they do. It's just a matter of like, I don't know enough about the world to know what I want to change about the way Sonic moves, other than if there's a slider for like having more in-air movement, I'm going to turn that to the maximum because that seems like the biggest problem I'm having. It doesn't look great. I think the enemy design is so... this is weird because I'm going to say this and you're going to go, that sounds like a good thing, but it they look like the dark element enemies in Phantasy Star Online, like these little not quite robots, not like, you know, not quite organic, you know, instead of arms, their arms just go into a point and like they just look fucking dumb. And you fight a few small enemies and then you get to the first like named enemy or the first named type of enemy. And it just, you know, this little one of these guys pops out of the ground and he's like twice as tall as the other ones. And then it just says ninja. You're like, oh, shit. But then you just like walk up, jump into him and mash on the X button or square button, if you will. And then he's dead. You're just like punching him over and over again. And then he explodes. The second big enemy I fought was called Tower, and it's a big, like, it launches out of the ground, and you're like, what is this giant phallus, this giant spiky, weird alien dick that is rising up out of the ground? You run around it once to do the initial damage on its shield, and then once you've done that, you can just kind of chip away at it and kill it, and it might be great. It's you know, I don't think it's a very good game, but it is so much more interesting than anything that has had, you know, any Sonic the Hedgehog video game that has been released since Sonic Adventure 1, because at least that was new at the time. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that game was good, but at least you looked at it and were like, well, this looks a lot different than other Sonic games. So at least this is a dramatic shift in like the style of game and the type of game and all this other stuff. And so that has me intrigued in a way that makes me want to mess with it and keep messing with it. But you should also know that I am a person who thinks that, and this is something, you know, we've talked about this on the program quite a bit, but, I'm convinced now, when I look back on all of these things and try to like separate the nostalgia and separate the my love of the Sega Genesis and all of this other stuff, is that there aren't any good Sonic the Hedgehog games. None of them are good. They are, in fact, all bad. Every single one of them. People in chat are like, what about Sonic Unleashed? No, they are all fucking bad. Sonic the Hedgehog 1, even the 2D games, when you, and this is the thing I will point to about the 2D games that is like, what the hell is wrong with, why did we ever fall for this? And it is the thing that happens when you stop moving and you are like walking up an incline and you hit the jump button. And like how hard you jump way far back and it's too hard to get it, like the time it takes you to get up a tiny hill. Okay, I will make a single allowance for a Sonic the Hedgehog game. One. Only one. and it is Sega Sonic the Hedgehog, the arcade game that was the trackball game. That game was cool, but also it's you don't encounter it very often, so it might be bad. If we had ready access to it with a trackball, if I had a trackball here, because you can play it in MAME, I will make two allowances. Sega Sonic the Hedgehog, the trackball game, which may actually be bad, but I remember playing through it at, I guess this would have been CES, when Sega brought that, and they just had the arcade cabinet sitting there, and I played through it, and then never saw it again for decades until it popped up in MAME. I have never seen the arcade version of that game ever again. Outside of the Consumer Electronics Show in, like, I don't know, 93, 94, whenever it was. Speaking of which, the next episode of Game Boys to Men should be hitting this week. We were talking about the TurboGrafx-16, the PC engine, if you will. The other Sonic game I will give an allowance to, and this game I think is actually good, and that is Sonic the Fighters. Sonic the Fighters is fun. The limited shield that you have to kind of encourage aggression, I think, is fun. I think it is a fun Virtua Fighter-esque fighting game with interesting characters that look cool. It is a good time. And it is maybe the only good Sonic the Hedgehog game. So that's my full stance on the franchise, just so you know where I stand as I'm talking to you now about Sonic Frontiers. Is that Sonic Frontiers is exciting because it's not any of those. Like, there are bits and pieces, there are elements of those other games in there, and those are the worst parts of the game that I've seen so far. The other parts of the game might not be good either, but we have suffered for decades with this franchise. So at least it's something else. And it's fascinating after all these years to see a Sonic game that is, like, weirdly different in dramatic ways, in ways that seem meaningful, not just, well, this one's side-scrolling. And this one's behind the back. They're both dog shit, you know? So I guess that's my long-winded way of saying I want to play more Sonic Frontiers. It is a very strange... I'll put it to you like this. This week, we've got God of War, and we've got Sonic Frontiers. Left to my own devices with free time, if I am choosing, I will probably end up playing more Sonic Frontiers. Sonic Frontiers may be awful. In the final analysis, it may be the sort of thing that you're just like, this is terrible. But it is different and interesting because of it being different. And that makes me want to see more of it, if you get where I'm coming from. You know what I mean? So yeah, God of War is also, God of War Ragnarok's also out this week. It's gorgeous. The combat flows really well. The writing is fun so far. And then I got to a point in that game where it's like, okay, we're going to walk you through the tutorial about how all the gear works again and how much hack silver you need. And, oh, you're going to upgrade this shield, and, oh, you're going to equip this, and your strength's going to go up here. And this, and I so don't need God of War to be a loot game. It's not purely a loot game, you know, it's not like you're constantly getting plus two this, plus three, you know, but there's just enough of it and enough of the things you're collecting about, like, oh, I opened up this crypt, what's in here? It's like, oh, 70 hack silver. Okay, fuck, right. I don't need that out of this game. And yeah, so having that kind of hammered into me in the early game was a good reminder about, like, yeah, right, that's right, God of War, right, this is the sequel to God of War. Yes. God of War seems like I think hard to say anything truly bad about God of War Ragnarok, and I haven't finished the game. But it looks so good. It runs well. It has 120 hertz mode, which I have not tried, but I've been running it at 60. Like this game fixes a lot of my problems with the performance of the previous God of War, where you were either like playing it at 30 frames per second or playing it at, like, I don't know, 40-ish, and it would, you know, never quite hit 60 in some situations, and that never felt great either. And I hit that wall with that game where I was like, man, the performance is acceptable, but like, I'm not, it's one of those things where like it makes the whole game feel a little bit slower than you want it to and feel a little more sluggish, and the combat drags a little bit as a result and all this stuff. So when you have it here and it's like, yeah, here you go, it's pretty much 60, but also it could be 120 if you want to go nuts. That's cool, and that goes a long way. I had initially just had a great amount of fun with the combat in that game, because if you're holding down the buttons to do heavies, then you're immediately launching people up in the air. You're getting the fucking chain blades really early on. You know, basically after the initial tutorial, when shit gets serious, it's like, all right, this is fucked. We're gonna need, let's get our stuff. And like, he puts them on, you're like, okay, good. And then you get out there and using those is fun, using them from a puzzle perspective in a scorpion like way of just like, all right, hook onto this thing and move it out of the way so we can proceed and all that sort of stuff. I think that stuff's really nicely done. I think even the Atreus stuff that I've seen so far is a little bit more compelling, because you kind of know a little bit more about who he is and what his nature is, and you know just enough to want to know the rest of the story. Whereas I feel like in the first game, as you're picking these things up and learning these things as you go and then getting through the game, like, you know, you're like, oh, he's something crazy, I don't know. But now it's a little more like, okay, we want to figure out what Atreus's deal really is. And also, Ragnarok is coming, and that seems bad. So, there's a little bit more, I don't know. I'm finding parts of that story a little bit more compelling as a result of that stuff. And like I said, the combat feels just much smoother to me. Part of that's going to be frame rate stuff, but like also it's fun to do launchers. Like, hey, it's fun to pop enemies up in the air and then beat the shit out of them. But also this is a game, you know, and maybe this is something, a problem of me playing it after Gotham Knights. It's another game where, like, oh, this enemy has a circle coming around it, and that means you need to time your parry, or, oh, it's a different color, that means you can't parry it, so that means you need to roll out of the way. You know, it's like, it's that combat system again, in a lot of ways, you know, in terms of just, like, how enemies approach you, or how you handle enemies, I guess is the actual thing there. Like when an enemy rolls up on you, and they pull out an unblockable attack, an attack you can't parry, whatever it is, then it's like, okay, well, now I need to do this instead. And then I do this, and then I do this. And like, it's really well made, and it looks great. I'm finding the characters that I've met in the early parts of the game to be really compelling. Zeus and Odin and whatnot. I like that the script is sweary. It's cursy. It's foul mouthed in a way that's like, you know, when you finally meet up with the guy that is the blacksmith that makes all your stuff, You know, he says something like, "Ah, let's see what we can do for you fucks." It's like, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, you can turn it off, but someone in the chat is mentioning all the handheld shaky cam cutscenes, which, yeah, that stuff I think seems terrible. I'm not a motion sick sort of person, generally speaking, but the it just looks it doesn't look good in the context of, like, here's this scene of Kratos sitting there. Like, the title screen literally is like, it's Kratos sitting there, then you hit the button and the cutscene starts. I'm standing up going, "Ah, we're doing this. I'm angry. I'm Kratos." I think it's the other thing is, like, every character around Kratos seems interesting. Kratos seems fucking boring as shit, like he always has. "I'm mad and I'm not going to take your deal because I know we just get screwed." Brr. And that's, yeah, I don't know. I'm just not that interested in Kratos's story. I never have been. Yeah, like I said, I don't know that I have anything truly bad to say about my time with God of War Ragnarok, other than it's just not grabbing me. You know, the combat is good, but also it is still kind of that, you know, dodge this, don't dodge this. You know, they're telegraphing the moves with that stuff, and it's kind of, like I said, maybe it's because I played a bunch of Gotham Knights before that, and that game is also very much that, and that sort of soured me on it here, but yeah, it's I just kind of, I'm leaving it installed, and in the back of my mind I'm like, I'm gonna get back to God of War Ragnarok, but when I think about the other games I could be playing and stuff like that, like, it's not grabbing me. It is not pulling me back in and, oh, I've got to see what happens next. Like, it's just not, it has not gotten its hooks into me, really at all. And, yeah, I don't know. So, like, I'm going to leave it installed, and there's a part of me that very much would like to see more of that game, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it all goes. You know, Sony sent it over, and I've been chipping away at it for a while, and just got to a point with it where I'm like, I think I might be good. I'm not sure. I don't know. But I hit that wall in the previous game as well. But in the previous game, for me, it was the performance stuff on a PlayStation 4 Pro. It just didn't run great. And the 30 frames a second stuff and all that stuff really kind of, that was the stuff that really pushed me away from that game, on top of the boy, like, all that stuff, just like, fucking whatever. I just could not get attached to the characters in that game at all. And yeah, this game I think does a better job, especially with Atreus, right out of the gate. You know, you're like, okay, no, okay, this guy seems all right. This teen boy seems like he's interesting. and I want to know more about him, but not in a way that makes me want to go do a bunch of Kratos stuff, you know? So yeah, there you have it. Like I said, you know, everyone seems to be falling all over themselves for the game, and that's to be expected. Honestly, it is one of those things that you look at and go like, yep, there are a handful of games that come out every year that, like, check every box in terms of presentation and cinematic storytelling and all the stuff that the certain segment of the game playing audience just fucking eats up no matter what. And it's definitely that. They absolutely made that game. And so if you're looking for more games like that, this is the most that a game is, I think, in this calendar year. And so I suspect when we get to awards time, it will probably do fucking quite well. I don't know, not to just fucking handicap game awards, not, and I mean that in a general sense, not necessarily the game awards. Do you think God of War has what it takes to pull ahead of Elden Ring? Because to me, it feels like Elden Ring has been the game people have been dying to give the Game of the Year award to since even before its release. Like, there's just been a certain segment of people that are just like, people in the business of reviewing games, all that sort of stuff, that are just like, Elden Ring, And I wonder that seems like the number one, number two swap, but I bet Elden Ring is strong enough to overcome any kind of recency bias with God of War coming out in November. But yeah, I think publications should be remembering games like Vampire Survivors. And not to get ahead of myself here, but I will not stand for people that are not thinking about Tunic in this conversation. To be honest. You should fucking play Tunic if you have not played Tunic. Arcade Paradise got some DLC. I was so excited. I got an email that was like, hey, we're putting out Arcade Paradise DLC. Do you want to check it out? And I was like, fuck. It was like, you know, I am notoriously bad at responding to emails, but I happened to be like sitting in front of my computer when that came in. And it was like 90 seconds later, me going, yes, I would. Yes, 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 I would. Yes, yes, yes. And so I got my hands on the first batch of Arcade Paradise DLC. It's three new arcade machines for your arcade. It's not new story stuff. It's not anything like that. It is a new icon appears on the desktop of the PC in your office, and you can buy three new arcade machines from that and put them in your arcade. And I was like, fuck yes, more games. Let's have some more fun arcade games. Let's do it. And man, none of the three games they released are good. Well, okay, good enough to be worth paying additional money for, if that makes sense. They're $1.99 each, but you can buy them in a pack for $4. And one of them is another DDR cabinet with like three more songs on it. And if you have played Arcade Paradise, if you have watched me stream Arcade Paradise, you know that like that DDR game in the base game is one of the worst cabinets in the entire game. And this new one has all the same problems in terms of the timing not being right and the like all that stuff. So it's like a bizarre thing to be like, oh, here's another one of these. And it's kind of crappy in the same way the other one is. You're like, wait, why would we, what? There's a light gun game that I don't think you can control with the mouse. So if you use the left analog stick to move a cursor around the screen, and it's just target shooting. It's like not quite Hogan's Alley, but it's like, you know, little plates spin around and you need to shoot the right ones. And then it goes on, and it's just that against a timer. Not super engaging. It would have been more entertaining with mouse control. Maybe they'll patch that in at some point. I don't know. The third game is called Empathy, and it's in a mysterious looking cabinet, and you hit the bumper buttons alternatingly to walk forward, and then there will be obstacles flung at you, and if you get hit, you get knocked down the mountain, and you can kind of save yourself and keep going. But like all the graphics are like ASCII art. And, you know, you're just meant to get as many steps in as you can, and that's how you're scored. And Empathy is the one that is probably, like, the most all right of the three, but it's not. All of these games would be fine if they were part of the core progression of the game, because it's not a problem that some of the arcade machines are bad. In fact, that's kind of just how arcades were, is sometimes you would go look at the latest new machine that came in and be like, this is fucking terrible. Not all the games were great, you know? It's like people talk about the golden age of arcades, but like some arcade machines are terrible. It's okay. And so in the context of you unlocking these machines and buying them for your laundromat turned arcade, it makes sense that some of them would not be good. But when you've removed them from that main progression and said like, hey, these games you can only get if you pay us $4, I think for me as the Arcade Paradise fan, I would expect the games that you're paying money explicitly for I would want those games to be better. And these feel like games that got cut from the main game for a reason. You know what I mean? So they call it Coin-Op Pack 1. And I guess the other underlying thing I would say is I love Arcade Paradise. And to me, it is also in that conversation about the best games that came out this year. And so I would be happy to buy whatever DLC they put out as a means to say, I love this video game. Even if the DLC is bad. And so I can only really recommend it from that perspective. If you just love Arcade Paradise and you think the people that made it should get a little bit more money, they've got an option for you. They also put the soundtrack out on vinyl if you are interested in that. But none of the three games they put out are actually good. And that's, or like replayable or, you know, like things you would really want to stick with. So they call it Coin-Op Pack 1, implying that they will continue to put more DLC in the game, which still has me excited, even though these three games are not good. And so, yeah, I am excited at the prospect of future DLC for this game, but this is, these three games are amiss, you know? So consider yourself more aware, I guess. What else is going on in the news? Let's find out right now. They're going to make a Gears of War movie. They've been saying this for years. They've been threatening to make a Gears of War movie, I feel like, for what, at least a decade by now, right? And it just seems to never quite happen. It's been around the block for sure. Netflix has gotten into the Gears of War business, and they have plans to, gosh, okay, they are going to release a live-action movie, and then after that, the plan is to do an animated series. And then from there, it gets a little hazy, and they're like, yeah, maybe it'll be more. I don't know. They announced this yesterday, which happened to be the 16th anniversary of the launch of Gears of War. A weird anniversary? I had completely forgotten about, you know, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but yes, it's been 16 years. Think about that. That's fucking crazy. Gears of War is 16 years old. The roadie run. The cover shooter. Not that Gears was the first cover shooter, but you know what I mean. In terms of popularizing that style of game, we have been under the influence of Gears of War now for 16 years. Yeah, active reload. Definitely. Those big, bulky, football-played-looking motherfuckers have been chainsawing weird underground monsters for 16 years. There are a lot, everyone wrote their news story about, this news, including Video Games Chronicle, which is the one I happen to have up here, but everyone wrote this story. And I think every single one version of this story that I saw mentions Dave Bautista, not a single one, like on Twitter, like the immediate go-to, well, what are you fucking going to do with a Marcus Fenix? What are you gonna do with it? Like, oh well, Dave, fucking Batista. Batista's gonna, of course, you have to get Batista. People have been calling for Batista to play Marcus Fenix, not for 16 years, but for a good long time. And people are right. I am with them that this needs to happen. that this has to happen. Batista needs to play Mark, and apparently he did express some interest in playing the role. I guess back in 2021, there was an interview with Collider where he mentioned it. Here's the pull quote that they have. "I don't make any pretense about it. I had a chance to get a meeting at Warner Brothers. They were talking to me about this and that, and I said, hey, let's talk about Bane. This happened to me one other time in my career. They wanted to talk to me about Fast and the Furious, and I said, I'm not interested. Let's talk about Marcus Fenix." So, seems like he's, you know, at various points has angled for him to play this role. And they're honestly, I mean, they put him in the game. They finally, on the game end of it, they were like, yeah, all right, let's put a skin in there that lets Marcus Fenix look like Batista. That'll be good. This is just a perfect match. I think that Batista needs to play this role. I can't think of a single person who would be better for it. I don't know who you cast in the rest of these roles. Like, who do you get for Baird? Owen Wilson. No. Who do you get for the fucking other guy in Gears that died? Chris Pratt, of course. Chris Pratt can play all four roles of all four of the fucking squad, right? Like, we just... Terry Crews as the Coltrane. Yep. Makes a lot of sense. John Cena as Baird? I don't know. I guess. Yeah, I guess you could do that. What? Man, I super can't remember the fucking fourth dude's name. Because he died. So, spoilers. Dom. No. Yeah. No. This. Yeah, it is Dom. You're right. It's Marcus and Dom. Yeah. That's why I can't remember. It's just like, when I think about a movie star whose name is Dom, only one face comes to mind. But you know, like obviously, like all the later Gears games had to replace parts of the cast and do different things, and like now you're rolling with Ice-T for a while and all this other stuff. So, the Gears franchise is weird, man. You think about it, like Gears 5 that came out, was that 2019? Yeah, 2019. That was, Gears 5 came out right around the same time as Control. I remember my daughter being just born and those being like the first two games I played. While I was either on paternity leave or kind of just back to work or whatever it was. I seem to remember finishing that game and at the time being like, yeah, I would love to see what Gears 6 does in terms of the story, but now we're at that weird point where it's been a number of years since then and I can't remember a damn thing that happened. Oh, it's the girls in it and she's got the medallion. That's what it is. And she's like part bad guy or whatever. Part bad guy. Welcome to the Gears lore minute. Well, you see, the bad guys. Okay. Well, okay. Here's your Gears lore minute. Look at all that juice. There you go. That's it. What more do you need? And then Marcus Fenix's son is a prick. But he gets his, so whatever. And then, yeah, the Gears Pop came out. The Funko Pop game came out and then went away. And that was that. Gosh, it's weird to think that, like, that game came out in 2019. And here we are, 2022, damn near 2023. Like, we probably, I mean, especially if they're going to start working on a movie and whatever else, like, the next Gears probably has to be happening pretty soon, right? like, it kind of seems like something that should have maybe happened this year in a way that, you know, if Microsoft just feels so backlogged and so backed up on so many different things. They wouldn't re-release. They wouldn't do a Gears 1 remake to go along with the movie. I would hope they wouldn't do that, because they did re-release. They did do that. What was it? What did they even call that? The Gears of War 1 remake. Gears of War Ultimate Edition. I guess that's just like remastered or whatever, but that came out in 2015. And like, yeah, I don't know. I guess you could like you could do an Unreal Engine 5 version of it, and I'm sure it would look even crazier now, but like they don't. Yeah, that feels too recent, you know. Unlike The Last of Us. It feels like that remake already happened and they should not remake it again. But, so maybe they just put out Gears 6 alongside this, whatever this film project is, or, you know, try to have it all in the same window to try to get people excited about the Gears franchise. I wonder if they will do a Gears Tactics 2, if there will ever be a sequel to that game. That was a good one of those games. Gears Tactics. That was cool. XCOM with chainsaws and all that sort of stuff. That's neat. I guess I would be up for Gears 6. I don't know. Like, yeah, of course I would. But, like, it's just, like, I felt this way about Gears 5 before it came out. There was definitely like what the fuck would they even do with fucking Gears 5? Like, they've already done it so many times. There's a quote going around that from Cliff Bleszinski, one of the creators of the Gears of War franchise, where he says, like, yeah, I think, you know, like, 'cause Epic sold the franchise to Microsoft at one point. Like, Microsoft was the publisher all along, but they eventually just sold the whole IP to them. And the quote is I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically like, yeah, once I left and once Rod left and there's a third name, they probably just didn't even know what to do with it anymore, which, yeah, maybe, I don't know. But also, they did that fucking, what was the, they did that prequel thing that People Can Fly developed. Remember that thing? That Gears game? I can't even remember what it was called now, but Judgment. Yeah, Gears Judgment. Gears of War Judgment. It's bad. That's a bad game. That was the game that was rumored to originally have been a Kinect game. That originally it was like, oh, they're going to do a Gears game for Kinect or whatever, and then it turned into that because people realized that, no, don't make a Kinect game. I thought Judgment is far and away the worst Gears of War game. Like, having Baird be the lead, just like everything from a story perspective felt like it just did not matter. The way they tried to add on like reasons to replay some of the levels just sucked. Like, just Gears Judgment felt like the game they made to finish up a contract, which I think it may have been. And then that was right around the time that PlayStation 3 build of Gears started. It was rumored, because there was at one point, like, you know, before the Microsoft sale happened, I thought that there was talk about like, oh, let's bring Gears to PlayStation. So I wonder if that maybe also spurred on the purchase of the Gears IP, was that they knew that Epic was eventually going to bring that game to Sony platforms. And they were like, that's bad. That's a game that people really identify with our platform. We can't. We gotta buy this. We just gotta buy this, right? I wonder if that's how it went down. Maybe it did. That build leaked. There were, I believe, the Gears PlayStation 3. I think it's 3. Yeah, it'd be 3. I think a build of that straight up leaked at some point. I don't know what state it's in or whatever, but it was one of those things that got denied over and over again. Like, what? No, Gears for PlayStation. We were never doing that. We never talked about, no, it's certainly not. And then this build surfaced years later and you're like, Gears of War. Yeah, that's Gears of War. Am I right? I like Gears of War. I don't like the multiplayer. I don't like the competitive multiplayer in Gears. Or at least, I don't like the people that play it, because it's one of those situations where you jump into a match and everyone is way too good at rolling behind you with the shotgun. And not to say that's an invalid way to play the game, but it's one of those things that I don't want to get good at that particular thing. I don't want to have to be the shotgun roller and all the other stuff. And so, and when people do it, it's the sort of thing that makes you just want to, like, I just don't want to play this anymore. And so, the competitive multiplayer in Gears always really rub me the wrong way. So, yeah, really good horde mode, obviously, all that stuff. They made that horde mode happen. Take-Two, as part of their earnings call, came out and said that the leaks, the leaked Grand Theft Auto 6 stuff, will not impact the game's development. This is something they said before, but I thought the quote was interesting here. This is something that Video Games Chronicle pulled. It says, there's no evidence that any material assets were taken, which is a good thing. This is from Strauss Zelnick. And certainly the leak won't have any influence on development or anything of the sort, but it's terribly disappointing and causes us to be ever more vigilant on matters relating to cybersecurity. Influence is a really interesting word. So, like I said, they said early on, they're like, yeah, nah, nothing... nothing got stolen that's going to make us do any work or whatever. And I just think it's something about the concept of, like, oh, well, if people didn't like what leaked, is are Rockstar going to make changes? Are they going to like let the response to that influence the game? And this seems to be them saying absolutely not, which it's honestly really funny. When you think about Rockstar and how dedicated to their vision or whatever they have been in most of their games, the idea of outside influence being a fucking thing is, like, hilarious to me. The idea that, like what Rock, I wonder, maybe they have. I wonder if Rockstar has ever focus tested a game, like, at an early enough stage that it would be their call to do it. I mean, maybe at the Take-Two level, maybe they've gone and done mock reviews, or maybe they've gone and done whatever late in the process. But there's just something about, like, those games, there's something about the way that those people have carried themselves over the years, that, like, the very idea, if anything, they seem like the sort of people that if the reaction was, like, negative, they'd be like, well, fuck them. Well, now we're quadrupling down on that fucking thing they didn't like, because fuck them. We're making the game we want to make. Fuck you. That seems like a very Rockstar thing to do to me, honestly. But, you know, there's been so much, there's been a lot of change at the top of that company over the last handful of years here, with, you know, from Leslie Benzies to Dan Houser and, you know, all that sort of stuff, going all the way back to Geronimo and some of those people that have gotten out of the company. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there are things. There was a story recently about, like, oh, they're trying to not kill people while they work on their games. Like, yeah, that's a good start. Because they definitely had some of that happen over the years. And trying to not crunch and trying to not do that stuff and trying to make games in a more reasonable pace and all that seems like a really great thing. But also, even that just seems like so different from the Rockstar that I think of. When I think about Rockstar, I don't know. Those people always seem like real jerks, but also real jerks that were putting out crazy video games every 5 years or whatever it was. And so, you know, at the time, that was more acceptable than it is now. And it was one of those things that just people didn't really talk about, and it just, you know, the crunch, the conversation just didn't really like people didn't really think of it in that nuanced way that they do now. It's much better now that people do at least consider that sort of stuff. And it's nice to hear that, you know, the people working on GTA 6 are maybe not working themselves to death while they do it. And all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I don't know. As you may know, I am a frequent TikTok user. I like to watch. And for whatever reason, the algorithm has decided that I really like to watch videos of people playing Grand Theft Auto. And there are some weird stunt videos and silly stuff that I have watched. So it's not a total mystery as to how the algorithm has done that. But like the way people play GTA now with all this role playing stuff and all of that just seems like so uninteresting to me. I don't want to fucking have shitty voice chat improv with kids that are pretending to be cops. Like, it's just embarrassing. Half these videos, like, you watch them do it and you're just like, oh my God. And that's me outside looking in to actually have to interact with and talk to these people. And you have to assume that 100% of them are streaming. And they're just like, it's my hilarious Grand Theft Auto roleplay. And you're like, oh, fuck, dudes. Come on. It is so dire. And you just kind of look at that stuff and you think about what does that mean for the next Grand Theft Auto, right? Because obviously Red Dead didn't get it done. Red Dead Online did not do GTA Online numbers. GTA Online is still doing GTA Online numbers. So in terms of like influence on the shipping game, like, yeah, the leak might not have it, but do you think that they are watching that stuff and thinking, we probably need to figure out some ways in the whatever the follow-up to GTA Online is, we probably need to find some ways to better facilitate this type of play, this type of long-term role-playing, this type of long-term server-based architecture where the same groups of people want to get together. Like, do you think they look at 5M and they're like, well, we've got to support some percentage of these features to, you know, make sure that we're, you know, because this is something that these players are going to want to do. Like, do you think that they go out of their way to cater to that audience? Or do you think they look at it the same way I do and be like, we need to find ways to make it harder for these people to do it because boy, oh boy. I wonder. Like, that to me, like, the stuff, what they do to the online mode and how they expand that tool set in ways that will make that game live on for a decade or you know, the things they're trying to do to try to make this thing live forever and you know, make the money keep coming in and all the other stuff. Like, what do you... Yeah, I wonder what they will do to in order to kind of cater to where that game has gone, because it's gone some very weird places. And more power to the people that are doing that sort of stuff. I cannot. More reporting coming out of the wrestling world. It's always interesting when we get video game news out of wrestling sites. But, you know, not entirely out of the question that this happens. Reporting is going around claiming that AEW Fight Forever, the first video game, the first wrestling game, I guess I should say, from AEW, is said to be a day one release for Xbox Game Pass. There's so much stuff we still don't know about AEW Fight Forever. The last we heard, it was supposed to be due out in the fall, and they have not given any kind of updated release date. They have really been quiet about the roster, and I imagine recent events around what some of that roster has been up to has probably made them wonder even more about like who is going to be in this fucking game. They showed it off at TGS, let people play it. People seem to like it, the way it plays, all that sort of stuff. I, watching videos of it and seeing kind of what the controls are and all of that, I think it looks pretty interesting. I'm not really a fan of that Aki style of wrestling game. Never really have been. Though the time I spent training a client of mine to get better at the Royal Rumble mode in some of those games on N64 has given me at least some amount of appreciation for that style of game that I did not have before. But there's been no new assets, no other stuff. Like, obviously, the current cover is placeholder, and they will probably update the cover to that game on account of it has CM Punk on it, and that just seems like something they would not do for the whatever the shipping game is. And also, like, when is it going to come out? Do we think it will still come out sometime in the fall? Are they just, like, gearing it up for some kind of surprise release, and it's just going to drop, like, November or, you know, or you know, December 9th or something, and it just comes out, and you're like, here it is. It's on Game Pass. Like, nah. I can't imagine that that's going to happen. Because there's just so much, and that game seems so strange, because they're like, the last trailers and stuff they put out for it, it had a bunch of mini games in it, and they really spent a lot of time showing these mini games, like baseball, and some of the, and you're like, okay. Like, that's, you know, it's nothing wrong with having that stuff in there, but it just feels like we haven't really established, like, wrestling game coverage. Preview coverage of wrestling games, traditionally, and, you know, things are different now, but traditionally, all the preview coverage was focused on who the fuck is in this video game. Hey, who's on the roster to this video game? We would do Wrestler of the Week videos with THQ, exclusive roster reveal. Come back next Thursday for fucking No Mercy Thursday. Who is it this week? Scotty Too Hottie. And here's his entrance video. and someone had to write two paragraphs about Scotty Too Hottie, which is always fun. And so all of it was centered around who the fuck is in this game. And that's the stuff that there's just been a lot of swirling, even prior to anything that happened with, you know, the wrestlers leaving the company and or contract buyout rumors or what have you. The details about who is in this game and who isn't just seemed really crazy. Because, like, people who were with the company for a long time, like an Evil Uno, seem like, you know, sounds like he is not in the game, which seems a little weird. And of course they, you know, but apparently Cody Rhodes is still in last reporting, even though he is no longer with the company. Wouldn't be the first time a wrestling roster has been out of date. And I assume CM Punk will remain in this video game, right? Because if they have, unless they negotiate some weird specific way, but if they did the work to put CM Punk in the game, leave him in the game. Don't put him on the cover, but, like, whatever. That's how wrestling rosters are done. Like, there's sometimes you have people that are no longer with the company in the game. So unless there's some legal reason why they can't do that, like, might as well do it. But just the number of people who are not in there, and but I don't know. I think the question about, like, who the hell is on the AEW roster and who isn't is, in real life, is sometimes a weird question. So you know, having on top of that stuff, having the roster for the game feel so weird and all over the place is maybe not shocking. I don't know. This something about AEW Fight Forever feels like that maybe they bit off more than they can chew. Like they thought that they were going to be able to publish it themselves or something like that, and then realize like, oh fuck, no. We've got to bring in a publisher. Let's do a deal because we need someone to distribute physical copies of these games, and we're not going to do that. So let's go with THQ because that's the classic name that did it originally. So yeah, it's a very strange situation. The initial source on this story his name is Matt Black, and he writes for WrestleZone. And then those details about the game coming to Game Pass were corroborated by another writer. Matt Black, according to his Twitter bio anyway, which those are all accurate, is a former WWE games guy. I don't know if that means WWE side or 2K side. I assume that means WWE side, but I don't know. And that seems like something that a person that had those connections would probably know. But we will see. It would not surprise me to see AEW Fight Forever be a Game Pass release. That seems like something that would be a good fit for that. And that makes sense to me. This news is almost a week old at this point, but it did not happen at the time of the last recording. PlayStation VR 2 got its price and release date. And boy, oh boy. PlayStation VR 2 is going to launch on February 22nd, 2023. And it will be $550. There's also a bundle version of the game that comes with a download code for Horizon Call of the Mountain that will be $600. That's a lot of money. That's more than a PlayStation 5. It's easy to look at it and go like, well, if you look at what other VR headsets cost and this and that, and you know, like it's in the ballpark with some of that pricing. And so I guess that makes some sense, but that seems like way too much money to me. When you look at the games coming to the platform that they've announced so far, they also took the opportunity alongside this announcement to announce 11 new games coming to PlayStation VR. 9 of those games are coming to other VR platforms. And one of them is a VR Crossfire game. Remember Crossfire X, that Xbox Crossfire game that was absolutely terrible, made by Smilegate? Remember Crossfire, one of the most played games in the world, just not by anyone you know? They're making a VR Crossfire game called Crossfire Sierra Squad. Let's see here. Fierce paramilitary action between rival factions, Blacklist and Global Risk, in a variety of indoor and outdoor battle scenes with over 60 campaign missions, will keep you riveted. 39 types of weapons. And the enemies you'll face aren't just unintelligent NPCs. They have acute AI, so clearing them out won't be easy. It'll have, looks like it'll have up to 4-player co-op. What else there on this list of 11? The Dark Pictures Switchback VR, The Light Brigade, Cities VR Enhanced Edition, Cosmonius High, which is the new game from Alchemy Labs. They're the studio that did Job Simulator and Vacation Simulator. Hello Neighbor Search and Rescue, Jurassic World Aftermath Collection, Pistol Whip VR, Zenith the Last City. So, yeah, like I said, a lot of this stuff is either already out or is coming out on other headsets, and so not all of these are exclusive to PlayStation VR 2. You know, this, I feel like the conversation I would have about this is similar to the one we've been having about the Quest 2 price raise, the Quest Pro being out of control pricing wise, but also just the general flow of VR software and how much of it there is and isn't, and who is making it, and the budget of those games, and who's making big budget VR in this day and age. You know, Sony is making Horizon, and they'll make some other stuff, and they're incentivized to do so. The Oculus approach, the Meta approach, whatever we're calling it this month, you know, they recently went out and acquired some studios like Twisted Pixel, Explosion Man people, Winston's Heart. They've done some VR games, and they've been acquired along with a handful of other studios. So that seems to be the approach on the Facebook side of things. Is to just buy some more studios. And yeah, this, I don't know. It feels like the money drained out of VR development a handful of years ago and never really came back. And so you have the hardware manufacturers being strongly incentivized to try to make some bigger budget games or to fund some bigger budget games. But the venture capital that was like funding these early VR studios because they were like, this is going to be the future and we've got to be in on the ground floor, like that stuff dried up a long time ago. And so it just doesn't feel like the incentives are in place for studios to go make a big VR game. And so when you put out a headset that is $550 on top of the price of a PlayStation 5, is that going to create an install base that then further incentivizes bigger VR game development? To me, the answer is absolutely not. Because even the headsets that are out there now, you know, the Valve Index and some of this other stuff, like, you know, the like even that stuff, it just doesn't, even top end, top notch VR on a PC doesn't feel like it's big enough to justify a lot of bigger studios to care. So even those little things that we were getting for a while there that Sony was probably just paying for, like, oh, hey, with Battlefront 2, we're putting out a weird dogfight thing in VR, or Call of Duty 1 year. Didn't Infinite Warfare have a VR mode that they just kind of threw in there that was just like, yeah, you can fly the spaceship around in VR if you want. So even those crummy little modes, and whatever, to be fair, like that process also spawned the VR stuff in Resident Evil, which is very highly regarded. So, you know, it's not all weird bolt-on dumb modes, but it just, and none of this seems like it's moving in the right direction. And I putting out a VR headset for $550 just doesn't seem like a thing that like gets it much closer to being on the right track. You know what I mean? Like, what is the incentive for developers that aren't currently making VR games, for example, like bigger studios, you know, anyone in the Embracer group, or EA. You know, EA did that Medal of Honor game that Oculus funded. They published that game, so presumably they put some money into EA's pockets for that Respawn made, you know, and there was the documentary thing that won an Emmy or something insane. And that game sounds like it was very good. I messed with it very, very, very briefly and was like, okay, yeah. Half-Life Alyx was like the last big shot at a mainstream VR game, right? And what's the only thing, like the only thing people have been talking about since then is probably Bone Lab. But Bone Lab is a very deliberately uncompromising experience, and they kind of wear that on their sleeve as like, we're the cool kids, this is real VR, fuck all that seated VR, fuck all that comfort turning, you guys are punks. This is the real shit. And Sony's not going to allow that. Sony's not going to go like, oh yeah, make your game that people are going to get. Yeah. The game that's going to probably make a lot of people sick. go ahead and put it out on our thing. Like Sony, I would assume, would have a guiding hand saying, like, you've got to meet all these requirements if you want to ship on our platform. And I imagine that would be one of the things that the Bone Lab developers will be like, well, fuck you. Which is perhaps in some ways noble of them to make something so deliberately uncompromising. Or maybe they'll be like, oh, wait, we want to actually make money on our products. So... So maybe we'll find a way to make this ship on other headsets or other hand, you know, like they, like this most recent one doesn't work with the Vive controllers because they felt the Vive controllers were not up to snuff. And it's like, I imagine there are quite a lot of Vive controllers still out there, right? I don't know, whatever. I think anyway, like VR is still this weird small thing and it is at times very experimental, and I think that's kind of cool. But when Sony says, hey, we're making another VR headset for the PlayStation, one of the most recognizable mainstream consumer brands on the planet, you start to think about it in terms of just like, well, is this going to be the mainstream VR? And I super don't think so. Like, I don't think this moves the needle in major ways. If anything, this is going to be great for developers that like have VR games out there that they can port, because they're like, shit, man, we would love to make more money. We would love to be able to port this game to another headset and be able to make some more money on this stuff, because there's just not enough headsets out there. So for them, this will probably be great, but that also means we'll probably just see a lot of fucking ports, right? So I think the thing that I'm waiting on is if Half-Life Alyx actually comes to PlayStation 5 as a result of this, that would be interesting. Everyone seems to think that that's a done deal. Like, oh, well, of course it would happen. And like, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that's based on real info or if everyone has just, like, worked themselves into a shoot on this stuff and been like, oh, well, definitely Half-Life Alyx will come out. But You could make the argument that, like, it's in Valve's best interest to make as many people excited about VR as possible, right? Even if it's on a platform that they don't own and on a headset that they don't own. But I don't know if they care enough to do it. I don't know. Like, I think, you know, we'll sooner see Valve put out its standalone headset, the Deckard or whatever the thing is called, and maybe that will run some version of Half-Life Alyx. All native inside the headset and all that sort of stuff. And that seems like the work they would be doing, and the PlayStation 5 stuff would be like, eh, we'll see. I don't know. But at this price, I just look at it and go like, why do it? Like, what's the goal here? PlayStation VR 1 sold better than their expectations out of the gate. And they were, as I understand it, very happy with how that went. And I'll be curious to see if this goes as well for them. But also, what sort of software can we expect to see, and how much of it already exists on other VR headsets? Like, what's going to be the thing that draws people to this? You know, there's comfort. It sounds like it's a very nice headset. Like, the specs look great. There's that aspect of it. It's not wireless. But it is one cable, which is, you know, convenient up to a point, right? And I'll be curious actually to see if PlayStation VR 2 can be plugged into a PC and used with Steam VR. That would be cool. People hacked together ways to try to use the original PlayStation VR on a PC. Oh, we've got a breaking tweet out of the AEW Games account, according to Nanerpus on the Discord. Okay, let's see here. 2 minutes ago, the internet is buzzing about AEW Fight Forever, but at AEW Games is the official source for all news and info related to AEW Fight Forever. Hang tight for a new exclusive update next Saturday, November 19th, during AEW Full Gear, which is their upcoming pay-per-view, which I am excited to watch. This also seems like a good time to share that we don't anticipate AEW Fight Forever being part of any monthly gaming subscription services. AEW Fight Forever will be available in-store at your favorite retailers or online. Reserve your copy today at aew.thqnordic.com. So, sounds like they are squashing the Game Pass discussion. Which, of course, they would do that, because doing so, like, they've got to get the pre-order numbers up, right? So, of course, they're going to... This is the problem. You can't talk about... Even wrestling video games, the conspiracy brain kicks in. It's like, this is what they want you to think. That bite mark was painted on! Whatever. The Wayward Sons... Hear me out. Okay. Anyway, PlayStation VR, it'll come out. I'm sure it will do fine out of the gate, because I think there's enough people interested. They're going to sell this. It sounds like they're selling this through their direct sales stuff. On PlayStation Direct, which you can now register to potentially be allowed to pre-order it, which is an insane sentence to say, but that is where they're at with that stuff. And then I don't know if it's going to retail later or if it's also going to go to retail at launch, but maybe the only pre-orders are happening direct. I'm going to log into my PlayStation account here and see what it says and see what it's doing here. Please solve this puzzle so we know you are a real person. Pick the image where all animals are walking in the same direction as the arrow. That's that one. One done. Okay. I think it's going to let me in now. Oh, wait. Now I got to do my two-factor stuff, even though I have checked trust this browser on so many different websites that will refuse to trust this browser. Let's see. Where's the one for... Okay. It's a 9. And verify. So what they're doing is, yes, you can register for an exclusive invite to pre-order PSVR 2. If selected, we will contact you via email with details. PlayStation 5 console required. I'm going to click register now. And now it says thank you for registering. Can I register more than once? Registering more than once will not increase your opportunity of being selected. Can I pre-order more than one PSVR 2? No. More than 20 games are currently in development for PSVR 2 from PlayStation Studios and third-party partners, including Resident Evil Village, The Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners Chapter 2 Retribution, No Man's Sky, Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge, Demio, and the PSVR 2 exclusive Horizon Call of the Mountain. Yeah, man, it's... You know what? The thing I don't doubt is I don't doubt that that headset will be really fucking good. You know? And the rest of it is just like, the price, is that going to, like, how's all that stuff going to shake out? We'll see. Last story here. Electronic Arts is going to stop further development and investment in the Project Cars series, according to gamesindustry.biz. The team at Slightly Mad Studios has been working on Project Cars for some time now. And Project Cars 1 and 2, well-regarded. Project Cars 3 came out, and boy, people seemed unhappy in terms of it being too arcadey, not enough of a sim, all that sort of stuff. Like, people seemed incredibly disappointed with Project Cars 3. Project Cars 1 and 2, I think, are going to go off sale pretty soon here because the licenses for cars and stuff like that are going to expire, and so there's a bit of a problem there. And now that EA has acquired Codemasters and all these different car games and all this other stuff, they've said, nah, we're not going to make any more Project Cars games, which, again, given what Project Cars 3 is, doesn't seem too surprising. And people are angry about how Project Cars 3 went down. So this initially started with an internal announcement that then gamesindustry.biz got a quote on, but the internal announcement said, employees working on Project Cars will be moved into suitable roles wherever they can. And yeah, where does Project Cars fit in the larger EA racing and driving game portfolio now that you're kind of in there with Need for Speed and some of this other stuff? Like, maybe it doesn't make sense. They did have another Project Cars project in the works, whether that was four, or maybe they were going to do the right thing and spin off a different sub brand for their arcadey stuff, or whatever it ended up being. They did, GI.biz did get a quote out of EA. Today we announced internally an update to our racing portfolio. Following an evaluation of the next Project Cars title and its longer term growth potential, we have made the decision to stop further development and investment for the franchise. Decisions like these are very hard, but allow us to prioritize our focus in areas where we believe we have the strongest opportunity to create experiences that fans will love. We are focusing on our strengths in our racing portfolio, particularly licensed IP and open world experiences, and expanding our franchises to be more socially led with long-term live services that will engage global communities. Games are at the heart of sports and racing entertainment, and with shifting fan expectations, they're tipping their hands. Slightly Mad's going to be working on a new Need for Speed Shift, right? Right? No, not right. With shifting fan expectations, we recognize the need to evolve our games beyond pure play, providing experiences for fans to also watch, create, and connect with their friends. This sounds like a top level, man, what a statement. This just sounds like the CEO telling people what all EA games need to do. They need to provide experiences for fans to also watch, create, and connect with their friends. That seems like a mission statement across the company, not just a racing thing. We are working with everyone impacted by this decision to place them into suitable roles across our EA Sports and Racing portfolio, as well as other parts of EA wherever we can. Our priority now is on providing as much support as possible to our people through this transition. I thought that statement, we recognize the need to evolve our games beyond pure play, providing experiences for fans to also watch, create, and connect with their friends. And also, we're focusing on our strength in our racing portfolio, particularly licensed IP, which is the F1 franchise, right? They have that, right? And open world experiences, which is what Need for Speed has been for a while. And expanding our franchises to be more socially led with long-term live services that will engage global communities. So I wonder if we ever see a free-to-play Need for Speed. Skate, the Skate reboot seems like the big test. The next big test for, like, what is the future of EA games? Ow, I just hit my knee on my desk very hard. Oh, very hard. Oh my God, so very hard. I blame Need for Speed. Oh, damn. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. We'll be okay. It's going to be all right. Okay. Anyway. Ouch. The way Skate seems to be going about doing the live game thing could be a template for how they try to move forward. And Yeah, I don't know. Like the idea of like, because, you know, a driving game, there's no reason a driving game couldn't be a long-term live services game, right? If done correctly, you could put new cars into a game forever. You could put new tracks into a game forever. Right? So, but also the bit about like making the games more socially led in ways that, you know, stream better on Twitch seems like something, you know, when they talk about for fans to watch, create, and connect with their friends, you know, create, does that end up being like a, you know, you're editing the art on the cars in a Forza-like way? They've done some of that in the past. They want this new Need for Speed to be very like graffiti expressive, but I don't know if that's going to be you making your own stuff or if it's just like, yeah, we put a bunch of street art in our game this year. And connect with their friends. Yeah, the, you know, Need for Speed has had multiplayer for a good long time, but it sure doesn't catch on. I feel like even at launch, the Need for Speed games always felt weirdly empty. And it's usually because, like, hey, it's this big open world game without a lot of ways to draw those players together in interesting ways, you know? So it's like you call up the big map and you see an icon halfway across the city with, like, a name on it. It's just like, all right, here's Butt Stallion 800 over here fucking driving a Hemi, bro. But I'm over here trying to do these events, and so I don't care what the fuck that person is doing. They just haven't... They have not done a good job with that stuff. And I don't know that, like, looking at the new Need for Speed, I wonder if they will actually do a better job this time around. It's hard to say. You know, they took some time off, and you would like to think that with some time away from making an annual Need for Speed game or every 2 years or what have you, that they would have the time to really reinvent what it means to be a Need for Speed game. But I'm just not seeing any of that in the stuff they put out about that game. It makes me wonder what that, if that's just going to be like yet another Need for Speed game, which is unfortunate. I'm very fascinated about that game and what it's going to be because they took all that time off, and the Need for Speed games used to be very good, and then they haven't been for some time now. And I wish that they would get it back because there's just not a lot of, you know, Project Cars, like the shutting down Project Cars, I think makes a ton of sense when you look at all the ill will created by Project Cars 3. It's not a huge surprise that, yeah, okay, I guess I could see them scrapping that franchise. They've got 9,000 other racing games from Codemasters plus Need for Speed, if you want to count that. So they just don't need it. Unless Project Cars was going to skew back hard into a sim-like direction, but that's not the game EA is trying to make. They're, again, they want to make global communities. They want to make stuff, evolve our games beyond pure play, and making a thing that like is like, you know, 80% Gran Turismo, I don't think achieves that goal for them. So even if Project Cars was going to really skew back in that direction, that's not going to get it done at the scale that they are shooting for here. So license IP and open world experiences makes a sense in terms of like the things you would want to focus on, I guess. Here. We'll see. I mean, you know, like Need for Speed is out in December, right? And that's, what is that, Unbound? I was like, what the hell did they call that game? Oh, November 29th. Okay, so that's soon. That is 1, 2, 3 weeks away. I just want to have fun with a Need for Speed game. Yeah, yeah, Sazen's in the chat posting the fucking Snoop Dogg and the Doors remix of Riders on the Storm, where you've got Snoop Dogg in the studio going, they don't believe I'm in here with Jim Morrison. Aha! And then they fucking perform, you know, then it's him rapping over fucking Riders on the Storm. I want a video game that is the embodiment of that track from Need for Speed Underground 2. I don't want Need for Speed Underground 2, because we've been there, we've done that. You can't, these games at this point have to be open world. We can't go back to tracks and all the other stuff. I just don't think the mainstream audience will fucking stand for it. But that vibe personified in a video game form, as dumb as possible. I don't know what you do with Need for Speed at this point. It's funny, you know, because I think Forza Horizon has carved out such a very specific lane for itself, you know, and it's not entirely unlike Need for Speed. It's just a little bit more serious about the way that it goes about its business because of those Forza roots and all the real cars and all that stuff. And they only get really silly when it comes to the Lego or the Hot Wheels stuff, rather. I don't know, but they rebooted Need for Speed back on the Xbox One and PlayStation 4, and it did not work for them. And so I don't know how you focus a Need for Speed game, because you're probably going to be more arcadey than a Forza Horizon, right? But you still are kind of not, you know, you're still using licensed cars, so you're still kind of keeping one foot in the real and one foot in the strange real, if you will. I wish Namco, I wish there were more Ridge Racer games. At the end of the day, I just, you know, I'd really like a new Ridge Racer, a good rebooted, a good 4K 120 hertz fucking Gabber fucking remixes, and just all the fucking Rare Hero, and all, you know, just all the just Ridge Racer is what we need. If you want to heal the people, if you want to heal the culture, if you want to feed the people, Namco, put out a big, crazy Ridge Racer reboot. I would play it. I don't know how you make Ridge Racer a big mainstream, wide appeal game in this day and age either. But Namco doesn't seem like they're, you know, necessarily on the hook to make the biggest games in the world or whatever. But I don't know. Yeah, it's a shame. But I think that, you know, just the way the market has gone in terms of like the driving games that sell and all that stuff, like if Burnout couldn't make it either with the way things have gone, and you know, the powers that be have decided that, like, you know, they've done the math, right? And been like, oh, well, licensed cars actually is a big driving factor for what gets people into these games. And so if you don't have licensed cars, then you're going to fail at this. And the benefit of being able to smash the cars up and do weird shit with them doesn't outweigh the lack of interest you get from the licensed cars. And it's hard to tell sometimes if that's just an EA thing, because EA is so about its sports licenses and all that stuff that there's that whole it's in the game thing kind of just permeates everything, even the games that are not necessarily sports focused, to where they're like, no, we need to get the licensed real shit here. We need real cars. Because we saw what happened when 2K put out their unlicensed football game that played better than Madden. Oof. I somehow forgot that ASAP Rocky is in the new Need for Speed game. Why not? Why not? I don't know. That's it for the news. In terms of what's going on this week, we covered Sonic Frontiers. It's out now. God of War Ragnarok is out, I think, in some parts of the world right now, and it is worming its way onto store shelves along with the time zones and all that sort of stuff over the next 20 hours or so, 18 hours, whatever it is. And the Halo Infinite Winter Update is supposed to be out right now. That was supposed to hit around 10 a.m. a couple hours ago. And that is supposed to bring with it a beta for Forge mode and a revamp for earning XP and a bunch of other stuff along the way. Maybe not quite as much stuff as people want, but I am definitely going to be checking that out. I am very interested to see what they have done with Halo. This time, you got to feel for them up to a certain point. I feel for them up to a point on the Halo Infinite stuff, because I feel like that is a really good game and I don't know what the problem is, if it is like, hey, this engine, like we've got a mountain of tech debt here. There's all the stuff about like, oh, are they going to replatform it on Unreal Engine or something like that? Like that would be a potential way of addressing some of that stuff. I don't know, you know, retrofit their content pipeline to maybe work a little bit better for the years ahead. But yeah, you know, it's a game that feels like it has solid bones in terms of how it plays, but boy, oh boy, it just feels like, and you wonder, like, do you think they can turn Halo Infinite around in a way that will make everyone happy about it? I guess they managed to do it mostly with Master Chief Collection, right? Because people were fucking pissed about the Master Chief Collection, and they spent years digging themselves out of that hole to where now people are like, hey, Master Chief Collection, pretty good. But it feels like they missed their window. They missed their shot. You know, that like they'll make it right eventually. They'll eventually have enough content in that game that people will feel good about it. Presumably. But like, the vibes, if you will, the vibes coming off of Halo Infinite are rotten. They are, the community has been so mad for so long that it's hard to imagine a scenario where they do enough all at once to really flip that and get people excited again. Little by little, they'll probably get there, but like, they almost need something big and dramatic. And I don't know that this winter update is going to be it, but we'll see. I will come back to that game and I will see what is in this winter update, and I will go around forge mode and make some silly stuff. I always like to make infinitely spawning explosive boxes that would just fall and explode over and over again. That was my big forge mode thing. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. God, people in the Discord are putting a lot of tweets up about, or they're pasting in a lot of tweets up, like from the Need for Speed account, that make me very sus, like feel very ill at ease about what this is going to be. So this one from November 1st says, it's like, these are all bullet points. Palace. Need. For Stees. Four new intensely branded motors. Palace driving effects. Full Palace wardrobe selection. Pre-order to get 3 days early access. So like, they've gone and done a bunch of work with, oh right, that's the way Palace actually always talks, is that bullet pointed kind of dumb fucking thing. That's their whole style, right? That's why they're doing that. And what else do we have here? Versace. I guess the fucking Versace pants. Fuck this. I know there are still some people out there fucking living this way, and, you know, good on them or whatever, but doesn't it just feel like the whole hype beast thing, that whole like style, that whole visual style is fucking so done? Like looking at Need for Speed and some of the stuff they're doing, and now looking at the brands they are kind of bringing in around the edges for clothing and stuff like that. This seems incredibly fucking corny to me. Like, it just feels out of pace. Like, it's just not, like, that's not, like, people are not, like, there are some people that are still about that shit, but, like, people are just, like, not about it in the same way. It's just so not the fucking thing anymore. Not that I'm some fucking master finger on the fucking pulse type dude at this point, but, like, I feel like I know enough to know that, like, this shit is fucking, if you were putting this game out fucking 3.5 years ago, maybe you could have got, like, pre-pandemic, maybe you could have fucking done this shit, but, like, is Supreme in it? Did they go all the fucking way cornball with this shit? I don't know. Anyway, Need for Speed's out December 3rd, unless you pre-order. And then you get it November 29th, I guess. Why don't we take a look at some emails? Podcast@guard.bike is the email address that you will send your emails into if you want me to read them. And read them I will. And some I will select for use on the show. Let's see here. A few came in while we were recording, so maybe I'll select a few of those as well while we're at it. Okay. Now we will scroll back to around November 1st. Jordan writes in and says, "This last month has been quite a wild ride for gaming content, considering G4's untimely end and a bunch of shifts in online maker spaces. Recently, I was reading The Oral History of Games Master, a book about the 1990s video game show from the UK, and many parallels with what happened on Game Boys to Men with CES and Street Fighter 2, etc., and it really caught me off guard that this game show had such an influence on UK gamers as Electric Playground did in Canada and Video Power did in the US. My question is simple. Is there any chance of having the sort of video game-based television show in the modern era, even if it's for a streaming network? Or has it gone the way of Siskel and Ebert, where it's just allocated to YouTube channels and social media celebrities?" Yeah, I don't think that there's room on... I think demographically... I don't think the gaming audience, by and large, is watching much actual television on television. And so, and I don't think they're watching much like what they were like linear programming or whatever. It's one of those reasons why wrestling is still a valuable property, is because it does have that kind of, it's live. And so it becomes that kind of appointment television sort of thing that can get people in younger demographics to tune in to actual television. But I think video game information travels so quickly online and so natively online that the idea of like, I'm going to come back once a week to watch a television show about video games and it's going to try to be this one size fits all thing in half an hour where they're doing reviews and they're doing previews and we've got some codes for you, you know, whatever, like the different elements of a magazine kind of compressed into a 23-minute package or whatever. I don't think it does the subject matter enough justice. I think video games need more space and time if you truly want to talk about them properly. You can do the quick review. You can do that sort of stuff. Like that's obviously very doable. And, you know, you could make your 90-second video that's just like, here's the short version of this. Halo doesn't have enough maps, but it's fucking fun. I don't know. Shit. Sonic Frontiers. You could play it. It doesn't seem great, but also at least it's fucking interesting. We give it a 4 out of 5. You know, like, you can do it. But, like, yeah, the idea of, like, a you know, 4 p.m., get around the TV, watch this sort of stuff, or tune into some fucking Pluto channel or something like that. It was to me, it was the biggest miscalculation about this G4 relaunch. It's just, like, demographically, who the fuck wants that? You know, like who is the like is that type of content, even a full network devoted to it, You know, are they going to be able to produce enough content to make it matter in a way that does better than fucking Twitter, or, you know, or just the internet in general at just getting the information out there quickly? I always felt like the right way to do G4, and this is from back in the day, the reboot was cursed out of the gate. Like, that thing just seemed like a pet project for the son of the CEO of Comcast or something fucking insane like that, you know? But I always would want to, the way I always thought that stuff should have been run, and I'm not telling you that this would be, that this would do well in the ratings. I don't think it would, but, you know, I don't think it would be very mainstream, because I don't think there's a mainstream audience that needs the minutia the way that, like, the way that I do still, and I fucking do this, but I want a level of minutia, and I suspect that most of you do as well. I would want to be like fucking breaking into programming all the time. But breaking news, this shit just happened. AEW just said that their game's not going to Game Pass. Anyway, now back to fucking cheaters, you know, or whatever. I would want to have a live network that is always live in a CNN-like sense that still has its programming and still has its regular stuff, but is kind of like always there with the latest, you know? And G4 was never that, because it was always individual programs. And so those individual programs could only do so much. And you could have your news briefs and news breaks and do little things here and there and have a news desk and do your live things during breaks. But I don't even know that they really did that much. But, you know, it's just, I think that's the sort of thing that I would want out of a 24/7 network devoted to gaming, is like the sort of thing that you leave on and you fucking find all that shit out. But it was never that, you know? And so instead it was always dated. X-Play was the most up-to-date thing they had. Attack of the Show was at least like live, right? And so you know, you did have that stuff, but like, I would make that station be 24/7 live, or at least like live during American daylight hours and evening time and all that other stuff. And then maybe at night you do some packages or some, you know, whatever, for your overnights, infomercials probably, really. But I would want something that was always fresh and always fucking ready to go, and always had the latest. And always was like, hey, we're going to, you know, but also we're going to play some of this game for an hour. And now I remember hearing stories about like G4 trying to cover M-rated games and how hard that was for them. And so just even for out of the get-go, as more and more M-rated games come out and that happens more and more, the idea of just like, we're going to stream, we're going to play an hour of this video game on television. That's what I would want. Is a lot of what we're getting online now. So, you know, it kind of doesn't need to exist because there's so much of it online now. That the idea of just like, what's a television channel? It's antiquated. Like, you don't need it anymore. It's 2022, you know? But I think that's, again, part of why the G4 reboot never made much sense to me is it was that idea of just like, okay, are you bringing it back as a real television channel? Am I going to tune in on the dial? Am I gonna go to fucking Tubi and catch it, or, you know, Pluto, whatever the fuck? And the answer was like, I guess it was on YouTube TV, because I saw some emails going around saying it's going to be discontinued off of YouTube TV today or tomorrow or something like that, now that the network's shutting down. But it just, yeah, I don't know. Like, that's the sort of thing I would want, but I don't think that there are enough people, I don't think there are enough players out there that really want, that really need that, you know? So it's just kind of caught in the middle, and you know, like, people that are very casual players don't really need anything that G4 or any kind of gaming-focused television show would have to offer, because they just absorb what they absorb through osmosis. You know, they're uncritically just like, oh, I don't know, new NBA 2K is out, we're buying that. Wait, don't you complain about that game and how much it sucks every single year? Yeah, but it's not like there's other basketball games coming out, so we're just going to buy that again. And you know, those people don't want to watch fucking television about games either. So I don't know what you'd produce for that sort of stuff. You know, could you do 24 hours of an X Play like show? Not, I mean, no, sort of, but you would want review coverage. You would want, and you know, you would probably figure out a way to revisit things throughout the day, right? If you had your review of God of War, you would figure out like, okay, well, we're going to run that review once an hour. You know, you like treat it like fucking CNN or, you know, or treat it like fucking C-SPAN or whatever and program it that way. Maybe that's probably what I would do. And it would have been shut down even faster than what they did, I think. So, you know, I just, you know, it's, I don't think that is something that an audience really wants. And, you know, stuff like Electric Playground, I think, is in the same boat, honestly. Video Power, I don't even remember what Video Power is. And Games Master I've heard of, but, you know, I've probably seen clips over the years. But, you know, the internet exists. And when the internet exists, I think the actual situation is, do we need any television? Do we need any kind of like linear broadcast networks? Like, what demographic is that for? It's for old people that used to watch television and still want to watch television, right? I mean, that's who that stuff is for. So when we talk about video games, which is still, you know, a different demographic than that sort of stuff, I think that there's just no room for it. And I, you know, as that demographic continues to age out of existence, which is, it's grim, but hey, that's, you know, it's not like there are new people being born and growing up being like, I love to watch television at the same rate that these people in their 70s do. Like, it's just, it's all going to go away. It's all going to become online stuff. It's all, you know, like it's not like there's going to be some sudden resurgence in fucking television and programming a 24-hour block of stuff. There'll still be things that do that, but not in the way there used to be. And that's largely probably a good thing. You'll still have stuff that's live. I mean, you know, I think like that's, I like doing this show live. I don't have to do it live. It'd be easier to occasionally edit it if I didn't do it live, honestly. But I think live ass live is fucking good shit. And so that's why I think wrestling still largely works, you know, is a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it is fucking real ass live shit. And it's why Twitch does so well. The reason why live programming works, I think, is that people know in the back of their mind, deep down, almost subconsciously, that they might see some fucking wild shit. You know what I mean? And then that shit goes away because like, we didn't mean to show this. We've got to edit this out of the rebroadcast. Like, no, I was watching it live. I caught the real shit. Anything can happen. It's fucking live. And I think that's part of why I like just Twitch in general. And it's the same reason why I liked public access television, even though none of that was live. But it was the whole thing of you're just like, who the hell knows what's going to happen here? And I think that's super exciting. There's like a weird downside to it, right? I mean, there's the aspect of this that is, you know, not entirely unlike the hit film Virtuosity, where Sid 6.7 is very interested in his television ratings and wants to kill more to get the ratings up. And, you know, like that, you know, whatever. That story's been told in 9 different sci-fi ways over the years. But, having access to the numbers and being able to look over here and be like, well, we've got 800 and this and that. And then seeing like, oh, I spent time talking about this and then the numbers went up and I saw this. Oh, no, we did this. And the numbers went down. Like the real time feedback is something fucking real nefarious at times, I think, if you want to use it that way or whatever. But it's, yeah, I don't know. I like live shit because it's live. And yeah, I don't know. I think that there's room for produced stuff, obviously, but there's nothing about that edge of your seat. Here we go. What the hell's going to happen? And I think, again, I think subconsciously there's an audience for people that wants to see something fucking crazy go down. Or interaction, you know, like the ability to interact live with people, I think, is also, like, you know, it's kind of why I was always fascinated by radio growing up, is like almost all of that is live, or was, I don't know. People calling in with requests and all that other stupid stuff. And, you know, people calling in late night shows, getting advice and just all this other stupid shit. You know, like, you listen to it, you're just like, I don't know what's going to happen. Probably nothing, but maybe something. Like, that was something that always kind of kept me going. Grant writes in and says, what happens if the Epic Games Store is shut down? Yeah. And it says, do you reckon Epic would say, we'll transfer all the games you paid for to Steam, however, everything you got for free goes away for good? I would actually, you know, because of the way the transactions go, and you know, because of the court documents that, you know, leaked about how Epic pays for those free games, I would assume that that would just be a license transfer that wouldn't necessarily incur any additional cost. And so I would expect that because that copy, that free copy of fucking, what's a recent free game? Prey, as the Chrononaut saying Prey. Like, your free copy of Prey, Epic already paid the developers and the publishers for that. So you would like to think that those would all transfer over. But also, like, I don't think the Epic Games Store will shut down. So, yeah, in this scenario, would I expect everything to just transfer over to Steam? Yes, I suppose I would. But I would expect that the entire library would go over, including your free library or whatever. Gafto in the chat says, part of Twitch is just AM radio for millennials. Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. There's definitely, like, that's an aspect of the way that I, you know, like, I'm doing this. You know, doing this alone to me is very much in that same vein as the overnight radio DJ that is there from fucking 11 to 4 a.m. or something, you know, like that lone voice. And I like something about that. Not that I've not heard back, but I'm working on getting us a guest next week. But, yeah, I talk radio, for as vile as the majority of talk radio is these days, there's just something powerful about that I always really liked. I don't know. Both my parents listened to different talk radio. My mom would listen to KGO in San Francisco. It was the ABC affiliated station, and they would have, they had a doctor taking calls. They would have all, you know, Dr. Dean Adele taking fucking calls and doing his stuff, and, you know, and all sorts of other like local issues and all the other stuff. It wasn't like the daytime talk radio that was, you know, increasingly hard right, the kind of like Rush Limbaugh and all the fallout from all of that came afterwards. Part of me wanting to, when we initially talked about starting to live stream the podcast, the thing that I always said is I didn't want the video version of the show to compromise the audio version of the show, if that makes sense. And that means, and you know, I definitely fuck this up a lot because it's hard. But it's that idea of like, it's an audio show. You just happen to be watching it get recorded. You know what I mean? And so you're still thinking about things in terms of the audio listener and trying not to just like hold up stuff to the camera and go, check this out, which is, again, really hard not to do sometimes. I mean, I did it earlier in the show with that cartridge dumper, but hopefully I described it well enough along the way. And the thing in my head for that always, and this guy's, you know, he's a dirtbag, whatever. That's beside the point. But like the thing in my head all the time was Don Imus being broadcast on like C-SPAN or whatever it was. It was the most low rent video production in the history of the world. It was a dude wearing a dumb fucking cat. Was MSNBC? Okay. Yeah, MSNBC. Okay. In his dumb fucking cowboy hat, doing his dumb fucking radio show, and it was just him just talking into a microphone. Like, it was like the camera was incidental, you know? Like, he did not play to the camera. I don't even think he looked at the camera. Not that I never watched it at length. You'd just be flipping channels and just see it and just be like, huh, look at this fucking thing. You don't see shit that looks like this on television because everything is way too produced. And so in my head, it was always like, okay, the podcast is the most popular thing in the smorgasbord of things that we produce. We really don't want to fuck it up by introducing the cameras. We want the cameras to be additive, but not in a way that ruins the, you know, one of the most lucrative pieces of content that we produce. And so it was very much like, okay, we want to do this. We want to do this live, and that will change the show a little bit by us doing it live. But also, that's fine. We just need to make sure that it doesn't become a video show, that people aren't mugging for the camera too much, that people aren't, you know, trying to add visual aids to their jokes that don't get conveyed to the audio audience. And so it was really about doing that sort of stuff. And then, you know, once we eventually got more producers in that studio, it was just something that I was very careful to never, ever think about hard anyway, you know, at least not while the show was going. You know, it's like, okay, if you happen to have footage of a game that you throw up on the stream while we're talking about it, awesome. That's fucking awesome. That's great. That's additive. That's super sweet. But I don't want to plan conversations around footage because that would be crazy. You know, that would hurt the conversation quality overall. If suddenly you were like, oh, we've got 3 minutes of footage, so talk about this game for 3 minutes, or, you know, or whatever, like that would be no good. So that was always my approach when it comes to like a video podcast. Like, a video podcast is just a fucking podcast that if you can occasionally look at, right? I mean, and it lets you put it, it makes it easier for you to put it on YouTube, because I think that was the other thing. It was a distribution thing of just like, okay, well, let's have one more way to distribute the show. That's how I always looked at the video version of a podcast, is it let you put it on YouTube in a way that didn't look totally crazy, right? I mean, you could just have a static image of a show logo or something like that up on the screen for 3 hours, and technically it's a video. Because most people just hit play. Like, I would be curious what the stats are on people who engage with the video version of this program, who also like look at it, that are like dead set looking at it, like watching me do this, you know what I mean? As opposed to just like hitting play and occasionally glancing over and go like, yeah, that guy's still in that room, you know? Like, people just put it on in the background, they put it on in another tab, and you know, they're in chat. Some of you are in chat, or you're on the Discord. If you want to get on the Discord, hey, you go to patreon.com/Jeff Gerstmann. You can sign up. Join the goo crew today. We don't call it that. We definitely don't call it that. Sign on up. Get some bonus content. That new episode of Game Boys to Men should be hitting this week. All that other stuff. And yeah, so it's it's really just another, it's like, here's another way to distribute this show onto more platforms. Really, it's like, by doing video, it gets on Twitch, it gets on YouTube, etc. If I had time, I would cut up highlights from this show and put it on YouTube Shorts and TikTok, Instagram Reels, other platforms that still seem to exist. Man. Social media, am I right? You having fun with this fucking weird train wreck? I kind of am and kind of not. I don't know. It's fucking like fun to watch Twitter like kind of fucking fall apart in real time. But also I'm sick of talking. Well, I'm sick of reading about it. And so that's why I maybe don't want to spend a ton of time talking about it right here, right now, because the entirety of social media right now is about social media. And boy, oh boy, I'm fucking sick of fucking looking at it. But it is fascinating to watch that thing spin apart in real time, in a variety of ways. It is a slow motion car crash that you wonder if you're just going to wake up one day and be like, oh, it was a fast motion star crash, this car crash, and now we're done. Who knows, man? I think we'll get sold at a loss someday to someone else who will fuck it up even more or something. I don't know. It's an uncomfortable situation. Anyway, John from Birmingham writes in and says, I recently got my first modded console. It's not anything too crazy, just a Japanese GameCube with a Switch on the back that makes it able to play NTSC U region games as well. I play a lot of Japanese games, being able to speak the language, and a lot of classic GameCube games are very expensive in the PAL and NTSC North America region right now. It also works with a UK power adapter, so I don't have to worry about using a wattage converter. I cooked a Japanese N64 this way as a kid. Yeah, the older consoles and the wattage thing, I bought a step-down converter when I bought my Famicom Twin, which is it's a Famicom that has the disk system stuff built right in. It's cool. It's cool, man. it's fucking neat. It's definitely one of those consoles where I was like, yes, this looks rad. I need to buy one of these. This is awesome. But it's old enough that like the voltage stuff, like, you know, you less dramatic than the UK change, of course. But anyway, let's see here. I did have a freeloader disc, which I thought would work for everything, but games like Paper Mario and Chibi-Robo did not. Everything from this era can be emulated to a quality far higher than that of the original hardware now. I remember playing Xenoblade on Dolphin, upscaled to 4K at 60 frames per second, but despite this, for some reason, it still feels nicer and more compelling to play stuff on the original hardware. What is your experience with modded consoles? And do you prefer them to emulation or not? In a scenario where space and convenience is not a factor, for the sake of pure experience alone. Yeah, I don't love original hardware. I don't need original hardware. If I could have original hardware for everything and have it all hooked up and all that stuff, I probably would. I would definitely go the flash cart route with that stuff, or the ODE route, depending on platform. But I feel like the Mister has really dealt with a lot of my thoughts around that, the era of hardware that it supports. Like the idea of like, I need to have an NES. Like, no, I super fucking don't. I absolutely don't. I still have, I think, 4 or 5 of them in the garage. But I don't need that hardware, even with a flash card. Like, even if I modded it so it was HDMI out, or, you know, if it was RGB out into a fucking scan converter that hooked up to my modern TV or whatever, so I would still have that level of convenience. Like, no, I don't have like a special place in my heart for that sort of stuff. But that said, like, 3DO emulation is really quite good these days. Like, that stuff runs quite well. But when the 3DO ODE became available, as seen here underneath this box of Super Famicom cartridges I have over here. I bought one as soon as I could. So I was like, oh, fuck yeah, man. I'm just going to have an SD card full of 3DO games, and they're going to boot on a real 3DO. That'll be crazy. And it's awesome. And so when I see a fully kitted out Dreamcast, you know what I mean? That's got like the DC HDMI stuff in it. So it's, you know, spitting out to modern televisions really easily. And it's got, whether it's a mode or a GDMU or whatever, like it's got some kind of ODE in it. So it's loading games that way instead of off the disc. That stuff looks super awesome. And I remember seeing Peter Brown's Dreamcast that had been all fucking done up and just being like, man, this looks so fucking cool. This would be so cool to have. I should get one of these things. And then I was just like, but Dreamcast emulation is really good. It's not perfect. It's close. Like, I don't know. And it was just enough hemming and hawing that prevented me from doing it. But I would really like to have one for Saturn for some reason, even though Saturn emulation is getting really good. I would love to have a fully kitted out CDI, but I don't think that even exists. I don't know that. I don't think anyone made an ODE for the CDI, but boy, I wish that they would. If I could just get a CDI with the MPEG cartridge so that it plays videos and what have you, I would love to be able to look at that entire library and have it run well, because CDI emulation sucks. That's the theme with me. If something is super well emulated and I can play it in a variety of different ways, especially on the Mister, but even just, you know, hey, there's a really good 3DO core for RetroArch. Opera's FreeDO is a really good 3DO emulator. You know, the better that stuff is, the less likely I'm going to want the real hardware, because I don't really need it. And so that's why I'm like, oh, well, I'll probably hang on to my 360 and PS3 discs for a good long time, because that stuff's not quite there. It's getting better all the time. And those files are big, and sometimes you don't want to devote a hard drive to all of that sort of stuff. I mean, God, a complete PlayStation 1 collection, unzipped, BenQ, is something like, I want to say it's like 14 terabytes or something. I forget what it is, but it's a lot of space. You know, it's, in some cases, it's just easier to keep boxes in the garage. But yeah, I would love a CDI ODE and have that spit out RGB and all other stuff. That would be super awesome to just be able to experience all of the like BF Goodrich tire catalogs that came out on CDI, all the weird German product catalogs that came out. Like, I would love to be able to just see all of that stuff the way it was originally seen. And we talk about this on the latest episode of Game Boys to Men, which should be available later this week. The Pioneer Laser Active is, to me, it is the one that got away. I should have got my hands on one back when they were newish, but I didn't. And now they're ridiculously expensive. And the discs are crazy. I found myself looking at this shit the other night. I was like, yeah, what are laser active prices looking like these days? Like, oh, this one game is $700? Fuck. And you can't really emulate that stuff because Laserdisc emulation is really not there. Daphne and stuff like that exists for emulating Dragon's Lair and a certain era of Laserdisc game, but they do it in a really a janky kind of inaccurate way, where like you're looking at like MPEG captures of the video off the disc, and then someone has compiled like where the scenes start and stop, and so the emulator knows to look for that and trigger the video appropriately. So it's not quite it's not quite accurate. There is something called the Domesday Project, and they are apparently, they have apparently built a device that is better at dumping the data and the video data, all the data off of a laser disc, but it's not, I haven't seen it be used in these specific ways to, you know, let me play Pyramid Patrol or whatever the fuck. And so, yeah, I would like to own a laser active. Yeah, the RDI Halcyon. Yeah, sure. I mean, in the same vein of just like weird Laserdisc stuff. None of those games are good. Like, it's, but it would just be like, I just think of it in terms of what are the things I don't have access to in any way, shape, or form right now. When it comes to just like, what are the things I would like to have hardware wise, it's always going to be stuff like that. Because if it's like, oh, yeah, it'd be cool to buy a, you know, I don't even know. Like, it'd be cool to have every Neo Geo cartridge. Like, yeah, it would. It would be neat to have that stuff, but you don't need to. In this day and age, that stuff exists in so many different ways. It exists in so many different ways. You don't need to own a single cartridge or the hardware, or you could buy the hardware and buy a cartridge that will store every game ever made on it. So if you want to play on a real hardware, you can still do that. But it's just not, you know, you can have that experience in other ways now. And so I look at it as, what are the things that I straight up don't have and straight up can't get my hands on easily, or things that are actually really hard to wrap your mind around without the original article in front of you. And that's how I almost bought a Sharp X68000. Because that's a Japanese computer with a Japanese keyboard on it. And sometimes you just, like, when you are emulating that device, or there's a Mr. Core for it now, it's really hard to figure out, like, how is this, what is this asking me to do? Like, oh, it's asking me to change floppies from disk one to disk two, or put, it's a three disk game and I only have two floppy drives, so I need to remove disk one from drive one and put disk three in there and do, you know, like those sorts of things are sometimes really hard to like picture in your brain without the real hardware in front of you. And so that's led to like thoughts like that, you know? So when I think about like stuff I would want to have set up and stuff that I would be like, oh, what if I could do this? All of it is stuff like that. That's like either completely unemulated, really difficult to emulate well, or whatever, like things that are well emulated. And the Mister is the sort of thing that you could clear out half a garage off a Mister. You could be like, I don't need to own any of these 8-bit Nintendo games. I could ditch my entire 16-bit software catalog, all my Genesis games, all of my SNES games, all of my Sega CD games. I could sell all of that stuff. I'm not going to do that, because there are a handful of things that I am sentimental about. And Genesis cartridges, yeah, they look cool in the case. They look good. They look good. You know? So, but I am this box of fucking Super Famicom tapes that we bought off eBay for $1 a game and got like the worst fucking games in the world. I'm getting screwdrivers in the mail today. Fucking Gambit screwdrivers, so that I can take them apart and take pictures of the circuit boards if needed for the folks at No Intro. If they don't have that stuff, I think they have most of this because none of this is rare. I'm going to redump all these games and fucking take pictures of them for those people if they need them. And then I'm going to fucking get rid of them. Because I don't need this box in my life. I have no sentimental attachment to these games. And so I'm just going to get them out of my life. And we'll see how far it goes from there. If I start doing US stuff, or if I start like, oh, you know, yeah, these SNES games, like I could see myself getting rid of a lot of SNES games. But when I look at the games I own for Genesis, there's a feeling where I want to hoard them. You know what I mean? I don't know why that is. It's just the way it is. But anything that came on disc, any kind of CD-ROM stuff, I think I'll probably keep. Got to make room for that Credit Pig tape. Yeah, I haven't even given my address to the Credit Pig tape, man. I don't know what the fuck's going on there. Out there getting his teeth pulled out, but meanwhile, I'm here with no Credit Pig tape. That seems like some crazy bullshit to me. But yeah, no, there's just a bunch of stuff that I don't really need to own. And some of it is, you know, like, it would be nice to have, like, a really good ColecoVision or Intellivision that was, you know, very easily set up and could very easily run through modern TVs or a capture card or whatever. And that's specifically because they have insane controllers. So when you're emulating an Intellivision, it sucks. Also, the Intellivision sucks, but setting that aside for a moment here, the Intellivision controller is just fucking weird. The Atari 5200 controller is just fucking weird. And so there's a soft spot for that stuff that I look at and go like, well, it's really difficult to play these games accurately without the proper controller. And maybe those are best solved by, let me get a USB adapter for an Intellivision controller. I can't believe I'm even saying this out loud. That's a fucking terrible idea. And then you've got the controller and you can just USB hook it up to a PC and do that. But like, am I going to go get the Coleco sports controller? Am I going to go get a sports controller? This is the hand motion for sports controller that I'm making right now. That looks like I'm playing Stroker for the Commodore 64 a little bit, but am I going to go do that? Maybe. No, probably not. I don't know. There's just a lot of weird stuff out there like that with the controllers that would be. Shit, what if I did just get USB fucking Intellivision controllers? Because I have it's not a big box, but I do have a box that it has an Intellivision and some number. Let's find out. Let's go look at, let's see here. cloud.collectors.com/monsterdunk, and we'll go see what it has to say about my Intellivision. Apparently I have 44 Intellivision games. I don't need that. Now the 13 Gizmondo games, that I'm keeping. The 3 game.com games, probably keeping those. But the 24 Game Gear games that I have, I'm not sure that I have a working Game Gear. You know? And also, I don't think I want to own a working Game Gear. So I could take this copy of Lion King for the Game Gear, for example, and not have it in my life. The 111 Game Boy Advance games I own, just going off the top of my head, that feels like something I would want to continue to own. I don't know why. 33 Game Boy games, 56 Game Boy Color games, 14 Famicom Disk System games, 104 Famicom games, 67 Super Famicom games, most of which are represented in this box here, I believe. Including such hits as Dragon Quest III. I'm not going to say that game is bad, but I am going to say, I can't fucking read it. Why do I have Dragon Quest III? You want a WonderSwan check? I have 2 WonderSwan games. That is One Piece Treasure Wars 2 and Kinnikuman Nisei Dream Tag Match. In fact, not to introduce visual aids to the show, but I literally have those 2 WonderSwan games right here. I was holding them yesterday. Here's my swan. I bought a swan crystal in Japan when they were being discontinued for like, it was probably like $8. It is still, it is out of its box, but it is still in plastic with like the registration card with it and stuff and all that. And here's a Neo Geo Pocket, not a Neo Geo Pocket color. WonderSwan games look crazy. And they come in these cool slip cases. Here's One Piece. And here is Kinnikuman. Man. And the rest of this is all Neo Geo Pocket stuff. So, like, I've got... Here's a sealed copy of Dive Alert Becky's version. A sealed copy of Biomotor Unitron. This is actually in pretty good shape. Some of these cardboard boxes got really dented up. But this copy of Biomotor Unitron is sealed and tight. Tight. Here's a copy of Magical Drop Pocket that is sealed and looking pretty good. And then a copy of Dive Alert Matt's version that is a little crushed. And then here's a copy of Puzzle Link 2 that is sealed and also a little crushed. So like I said at the top of the show, I might just open some of these so that we can get clean dumps of them if we do not already have clean dumps of these carts floating around the internet. Maybe I can provide. I don't know. And then here I got this beta copy of Puyo Pop. I have a beta copy of Biomotor Unitron around here somewhere too. But I don't know where that is. I think it's in the other box with the rest of my carts, but I don't know where that is. Anyway, I have one PlayStation 5 game. It's Hades. That's the only physical PS5 game I own. You know, these PCN, I have 38 PC Engine games, and, you know, we'll talk about the PC Engine and the TurboGrafx on the upcoming episode of Game Boys to Men. It's hours of discussion about, mostly about the TurboGrafx and a little bit about, the Judgment Night soundtrack and Terry B's album, Power of a Woman, and all sorts of stuff like that. You know, the important shit. I have a flash cart for the TurboGrafx, so I don't know that I really need to own any of these if we're really being serious about it. 44 NES games, 42 Neo Geo Pocket Color games. Okay, yeah, there's way more than what I have here. Scrolling through this list to see if there's anything else. It looks like just Puyo Pop and Biomotor Unitron are probably the two that are pre-release. The rest of these, I have a bunch that don't have labels on them, but I'm finding as I dumped a couple of them that they are actually the final version of the game. They just aren't stamped. I have 9 Neo Geo CD games and I do not own a Neo Geo CD. Because you know why this happened? I was in Japan and there's a fever. I would get this fever. I would have a lot of cash in my pocket because I brought it to spend it. And eventually you get to a point where I'm like, I owned a lot of this stuff already and I am not going to buy any more Neo Geo carts on this trip. And at one point, there was a Neo Geo emulator on PC that could boot the CDs straight out of your CD drive. And I was like, that's fucking cool. And so Neo Geo CD games were insanely cheap. And so I was like, well, I'll get some of these. Why wouldn't I? And it appears they are almost all fighting games. I have Fatal Fury 3, Fighter's History Dynamite, KOF 94 and 95, Real Bout Fatal Fury, Samurai Showdown 2, Samurai Showdown 3, Viewpoint, and World Heroes Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I have 8 Odyssey 2 games. I have an Odyssey 2. I don't know if it works. I don't know that I need that. I don't know that I need that. 103 Atari 2600 games. I'd probably keep those because that's just fun. I don't know. I have a soft spot for the 2600. I am really looking forward to, I think this is out Friday, the Atari 50 collection that Digital Eclipse is doing. Is out on Friday, so I may just stream a bunch of that on Friday, assuming that that is all coming out and all that other stuff, because I really want to see that collection. It seems like a very interesting list of games, and so I really want to check that out. I have 11 Jaguar games, 13 Atari 7800 games, but I don't think I own a working 7800. You know, it's just a lot of stuff like that that's just like, hey, there are a lot of ways to play those games that don't involve having a working Atari 7800. And so do I need this stuff in my garage? The answer is almost certainly no. Do I need to own a physical copy of Donkey Kong Country for the SNES, a game I don't actually like and have zero nostalgia for? No, I don't. I have a copy of Chrono Trigger. It's a great game. I don't need that. I can play Chrono Trigger a lot of ways. So I don't need to own that. But I'll keep my copy of Bill Ambeer's Combat Basketball for the SNES. Because of course I would. You know. Anyway. I was going to say collecting video games is weird, but I don't necessarily feel like I collected video games. I just feel like I really like video games, and I have come into possession of a lot of them over the years, you know? And so there are definitely a handful of carts here and there that I really appreciate and really like a value from like a nostalgia for this specific version of this cartridge that I'm holding in my hand, you know, like that sort of thing. But I could buy a SNES flash cart if I cared about real hardware, even, which I actually kind of don't, right? So I could get a SNES flash cart and it would play all of those games and I wouldn't need to own any of them. So sometimes I think like, oh, what if I just held on to like the 6 SNES carts I actually care about for like nostalgic reasons and just got rid of everything else? Kept the hardware. It's my original launch SNES with the weird groove in it from where it fell off of my TV and landed on the corner of my VCR and has this big deep gouge into the plastic. Like all that stuff. All right. Perhaps I've been rambling a bit. Sean writes in with another question here. We were answering emails. I've always been fascinated by the concept of linking two PlayStations together in order to play Bushido Blade in first-person versus mode. Have you ever done this? This is nuts, right? And then he included excerpts from the manual that explain the mode. I have never done it with Bushido Blade, but I have linked two PlayStations together to play Wipeout XL. We did that in the office. In the GameSpot offices back then, we like, because we just had all that stuff laying around. Like, oh, dude, we could totally be playing multiplayer Wipeout without no split screen or anything dumb like that. And we did that. One time, a friend of mine brought a TV and a PlayStation over to my house and with a link cable, and we hooked it all up. But I think we just fucking played Doom. I think Doom was the only link cable game we both owned. Which seems like a bad way to go. There are a lot of ways to play Doom that don't involve lugging a fucking television to someone's house. But Yeah, that the idea of a link cable and linking two consoles together. I mean, now it's just they're all just on a LAN and you just, you know, or whatever. But yeah, it's an insane concept in a lot of ways. A couple of people hit me up about this after I mentioned. So my daughter has been occasionally playing Mario Kart on the GBA. That's been the version I've been setting her up with via an emulator. Because she likes to play games as the princess. She cannot steer. She absolutely cannot steer. Tyler writes in from Arizona and says, since you were talking about your daughter getting into Mario Kart, I wanted to mention that Mario Kart 8 for the Switch is probably the best version for young kids. The game has a couple of AI assists that can be helpful, such as auto steering and auto gas, which make the game way less frustrating for a child. I would also recommend looking into getting a smaller Switch controller. The standard Pro controller is a little too big for them to hold. Yes. So I think when my daughter gets a little bit older and kind of stops just randomly hitting buttons, that is probably an option. Right now, the really nice thing I've been able to lean on is RetroArch, the emulator front end, really, not an emulator of its own, has a button on it that is like a game focus mode. And when you enable that, you can't bring up the menu. You can't accidentally quit the game or delete the game or do anything like that. It locks it into the game. You can't get out. When I hand her a Switch, she will, within 30 seconds, start hitting the home button. She will start slamming the screenshot button, all that sort of stuff. She will find herself out of the game and going like, what the hell happened? And this happened yesterday. She's been, she's a fan of Animal Crossing on the 3DS, the last good Animal Crossing. And, usually I play and she kind of directs me what to do and all that sort of stuff. And that works out mostly good. But I let her, she wanted to walk around herself. So I'm like, okay, yeah, here you go. You can use this and walk up here and you can go up here and oh yeah, you can sell your fruit, but like come over here when you're gonna sell your fruit. Cause you have no idea what you're doing. You're three. And she kept hitting the home button and she kept launching other software. And so basically yesterday we lost our Animal Crossing save four different times in terms of like the progress made that day. We went to the island and I loaded up on beetles and fish and stuff. And then I got back and we sold it. And then I let her walk around and then she quit the game, which in Animal Crossing on the 3DS, all it just says is like, yeah, hey, you didn't save before you quit last time, so some stuff might be gone. And what that means is everything you just did is now undone. So it's, she needs a little bit more time to kind of get used to which buttons not to hit just as much as which buttons to hit and stuff like that. So after a little more, also she, sometimes she is a naughty girl and does not deserve to play more video games. Sometimes she has been known to throw a tantrum when not allowed to play more video games, which I'll tell you, I've done that, but like not, you know, but that's not okay. So yeah, I don't know. She's still been playing Kranken's Time Travel Adventure on the Playdate and a little bit of Animal Crossing, but I'm trying to get her weaned off of the Mario Kart and Super Princess Peach for now, because she's not having fun with it. She's just like, now load up the next track. She just wants me to load up tracks, and then she bumps into a wall for 10 seconds and then wants me to load up a different track and does the same thing again. So I was like, eh. You know, not the best experience for her, but whatever. She's having a great time. She doesn't know. She's loving it. So whatever. And that's been interesting. Like she, as much, my son saw me playing Sonic Frontiers and then she came in not long after and watched me play a little bit of Sonic Frontiers. And I feel like I'm doing my children a disservice by exposing them to Sonic Frontiers. She has not put two and two together and realized that the blue thing from the video game is also the blue thing that's on these bed sheets over here in my office. So at least she hasn't I've never uttered the name Sonic. I refuse to tell her the name of the character. She asks, who is this? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to do that to her. She's too young. She has so much. She's so full of exuberance and life. I don't want to send it all crashing down by, really exposing her to the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. She's too young. Maybe when she's 18, you know. When she's 16, I'll let her get her ears pierced, and then at 18, she can know who Sonic the Hedgehog is. Them's the rules. And that's going to do it for this episode of The Jeff Gerstmann Show. We'll be back on Wednesday morning playing some video games. I guess we are going to play a bunch of Sonic Frontiers. I guess that's how that's going to go, right? Is I'm going to stream a bunch of Sonic Frontiers tomorrow. And then on Friday, I would like to stream a bunch of Atari 50. And we'll see if that schedule holds up. Hopefully it will. And we'll take a look at all that stuff. So come on back tomorrow. We'll play some Sonic. And then we'll play some Bounty Bob Strikes Back on Friday. If all things work out. I don't have Steam open, but that is the Atari 50 is out this Friday, right? I'm not crazy. November 11th is what it says. Approximately 2 days. So, yeah. So it should be out by then. We'll play some Caverns of Mars. Oh, man. I could fire some Caverns of Mars right now, honestly. But we'll check it out all official-like when that thing comes out. Because I'm excited about all the interviews. Oh, yeah, anyway, we'll check back on that stuff then. Everybody have a great rest of your week. We'll be back on Tuesday, of course, with the next installment of this frickin' podcast. It's the Jeff Gerstmann Show. Find it where you get podcasts. Find it on Patreon. You want an ad-free version of the show? You can get it. Oh, you can get it. Head on over to enjoyyourgaming.com. That's a little shortcut over to the Patreon. You can sign up, get access to bonus content, early access to the Jeff Gerstmann Hall of Fame, as well as episodes of Game Boys to Men, the hottest podcast about the early 90s you've ever heard. It is blowing up. There are no charts. It's a Patreon exclusive. It's not out there. It's for you, baby. Get out there and check that out. Read all the tiers and check all that stuff out. And new episode of Game Boys to Men hitting this week. I just got to cut it together. That'll be out the door, hopefully in the next day or two, and all that sort of stuff. I'll see you soon. Everybody have a good rest of your week. If you're not with me tomorrow or Friday, then I'll see you on Tuesday for the podcast.